I forgot to ask, is everyone recording?
Yes.
All right, I am too, so let's just go. We're synced.
Let's roll it!
Go.
Hello, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 118.
God.
Hey.
Let's hope we make it all the way through this one.
118.
118.
It's really like
James.
126 if you count all the ones we've lost in the past.
Feels like 1,000. Yeah.
RFN episode 942. Well,
we're so happy to be here today to speak to you.
Fuck.
Yes. So we've had some major technical problems lately. But we're instituting new policies, new safeguards, and we're gonna iron out all the problems.
One of those safeguards is that we're not actually recording any of this.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
So there, you can't have anything go wrong.
We're actually doing this live in iTunes right now as you're listening to it.
Here's how confident I am that I'm telling you this episode will work. I'm jinxing the shit out of this episode.
Good job,
so James, you better be on the ball and make this shit work.
It's impossible over here. Anyone that wants to get out,
I'm handicapping you.
Putting all the chips
into
the middle of
it's going to go as fast as it can through the iceberg field.
All right, so you might have heard that last week Nintendo kind of went apeshit crazy and announced about 1,000 things. We're not going to be able to talk about all of them today, but we've picked out a number of things to talk about, and we're going to spend the whole show doing that. So no new business this week. We'll catch up with it next week, hopefully. No listener mail. I do still, and I talked about this last week, but you haven't heard it because it was lost. So let me go back over this really quickly. What I would like to do is have listener mail on every episode going forward, starting next episode. So what we'd like to do is maybe 3, 4, 5
starting
letters every week. So we'll do smaller portions, but we want it to be more consistent. And we have a small backlog built up of things. We're going to redo the questions we did last week because I don't want those people to be punished for just having the misfortune of being on the wrong episode. So we're going to redo those. We're going to do some of the new ones we've gotten. But we need your mail to keep this going on a regular basis. So please send comments on whatever we talk about today, whatever's going on in the world of video games, any questions you might have, any suggested topics to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And with that, we're going to jump into the news. And before we get into the crazy Nintendo Media Summit crap, It's gilded crap, I should say. But first we have DLC Mondays, of course, as usual. And there are 4 games this week. I'd say they're really on a roll here. Pretty good stuff. So on WiiWare, you've got Midnight Bowling for 800 points. That's a companion to Midnight Pool. I think there was Midnight something else,
Midnight
too.
Midnight Strip Clubs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Midnight Drinking?
Yeah.
No, it's just it's more from Game Loft, I think. Did they do what's it, James's favorite Breaking Blocks or whatever, Block Breaker Deluxe?
Right.
Block Breaker Deluxe.
Yeah, Game Loft is basically a cell phone game company. Yeah. They've made a couple DS games and now several WiiWare games as well, but they tend to kind of reproduce the same game over multiple platforms, as you might expect. And so these are sort of very simple type games that they already had developed the bulk of the code for mobile phones, probably. So anyway, there's that. If Wii Sports just isn't good enough for you, then you can pay $8 and get Midnight Bowling. We've also got Madstone. It's a puzzle game for WiiWare. That's also 800 points. And this looks kind of like Mr. Driller. I don't know. Did you guys see the videos or know anything about it?
No, I'm not.
I'm uninformed on this one.
All right. Well, it's not the most thrilling release. I think we're becoming a bit inundated with puzzle games on WiiWare. So you really are going to have to set yourself apart if you do one. And this one is definitely not a clone of anything else I've seen before. But watching the video, I couldn't really grasp what was going on. So it looks like you point at the screen with the remote and click on certain blocks to eliminate them and try to create chain reactions to make the other blocks cascade down to the bottom, something like that. So you're sort of breaking out blocks from a tower and trying to make it crash. So anyway, we've also got on Virtual Console Mario Golf for N64.
Sweet.
That's
oh my
first
God.
64 game. Yeah, the first N64 game in 2 or 3 months. I think the last one was Pokemon Puzzle League or something.
Great, too.
They would have released Mario Golf for the SNES, but they couldn't. They realized they didn't make it.
Okay. Well,
shit, you have to put it off the N64.
Well, just think, yeah, I mean, it would have come out like 6 months
Super Nintendo games are welcome as well. Those are underrepresented as well. But, yeah, N64, it's always nice to see something on there. This is a great game. It's 1,000 points. I want to say it came out in Japan or Europe not too long ago. But
it still isn't out here, but I think you're right about Japan. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because this wasn't a huge shock to me when it came out, so I think it must have been out in Japan.
Sometimes
get it now before Nintendo realizes their mistake.
Sometimes I wish they would port some of these N64 games over to, like, you know, something else, so they might actually release it, like, oh, the Neo Geo, you know, something like that. Just think, if you could port all the N64 games over there, I mean, they'd be coming out every week.
Hey, you remember the Neo Geo 64 arcade cabinet?
Do I?
Yes, anyway, I do, Johnny.
I actually do.
I remember it fondly.
The other game, possibly even a bigger deal than an N64 game this week, is Shining Force 2 for Genesis. And this is 800 points. I don't know a whole lot about it. I know it was developed by Camelot, which is funny. Mario Golf and Shining Force 2, both developed by Camelot. Both virtual console games this week, of course, from different generations. But
Camelot used to be big in Sega's stable. Until they got tired of putting up with Sega's crap. Then they joined Nintendo and put up with Nintendo's crap.
I believe the last game they made for Sega was Shining Force 3 for Saturn, which came out in three different versions in Japan,
no
but only one of them ever came
them.
Out.
Now,
only one came
where
to America.
Where do the Shining Force games...
But Shining Force 2
like, they,
is supposed to be
really good?
Awesome, but I've never played it.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, where do all of the... Where do the Shining Force games kind of fit into, like, the RPG pantheon?
They're basically strategy RPGs.
Oh, okay.
So I think they're more like Final Fantasy Tactics kind of stuff.
Maybe.
But I've never played one, so I really don't know the details.
I played one a while back, and I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes. I wouldn't go quite so far as to Final Fantasy. I would say somewhere between Final Fantasy Tactics and, say, the Fire Emblem series.
Like, do you roam around on an overworld map or not?
Yeah, I think there is exploration in it as well as grid-based
battling. But it's mostly just these battles that you're told to go to.
Okay.
Okay, well, James, I don't know which one you played. There are a lot of different Shining games. There's Shining in the Darkness and Shining Soul and Shining Saga or some crap. There's a lot of different ones,
Shining
and they're
Force
all
Junior.
Quite different. What?
Two. I've been saying two repeatedly, and then I finally decided I'd say Junior to see if that caught your ear.
And it did.
There you go.
And it
so
worked.
You've played Shining Force 2 before?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you were saying you played a Shining Force game.
I'm looking at art right now, and I recognize it was 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, then you know. All right, so it's a strategy game, basically. But it's supposed to be great. Everybody loves it, and it's out on Virtual Console. So, yeah, pretty good week overall. All right, if we're done with that, we need to move into all the craziness of last week. All this came out Wednesday night in America time, although it was Thursday morning in Japan. And then the next day, Thursday in America, Nintendo of America had an event in San Francisco where they sort of reconfirmed a lot of stuff and mentioned that some of it was coming to America. And then they put up all their fall lineup, things like Animal Crossing and Wii Music for people to play.
And not Disaster Day of Crisis.
That's correct. Disaster is...
Shit, fuck, damn!
Disaster has no release date in North America. It doesn't mean it's not coming out, but
if it doesn't,
so far,
there's going to be a Disaster Day of Crisis.
Apparently, Reggie has explicitly said somewhere that they are going to monitor how it sells in Europe to help them make up their minds.
Oh, good.
It looks, James, that, like if you're going to get your...
It's
if you're
already
get
in
your,
English!
If
well,
you're
going
to get your thrills out of this, then you're going to have to rely on...
James, I think it's
on...
a sort of a quality issue. They're not totally sure that it's good enough
to be worth
releasing.
It's a marketability issue.
Since we're on Disaster, I mean, Greg, your embargo's over now, isn't it?
It will be when this is going out,
Okay,
it's going out tonight.
I mean, why don't you give
about?
Us your brief impressions?
Well, I guess, I'll probably talk about it next week as well, because we will really try to speed through this, but it does, as I said last week, it does feel like a game that's been in development for too long. It feels like a game that should have come out at launch, because there's so much of it that's, like, gratuitously using every facet of the Wii Remote. You know, you've got gesture controls, you've got the pointer stuff with the shooting gallery bits, you've got tilt controls for the driving sections, you know, it's absolutely everything. is used. The speaker in the remote is used.
I was about to ask about that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the
and
full.
I love my fucking
well?
Speaker.
It's the full. The speaker thing is kind of funny for like when it does like emergency radio broadcasts through it because the terrible sound quality is quite appropriate. But then, unfortunately, if you were to enjoy that aspect of it, you have to have the sound of the shotguns and the pistols coming out of there, which sounds absolutely dreadful. So it's something of a trade-off there.
Well, you know...
My grandmother, when I was growing up, every time I went to visit my grandmother, she had this thing where she liked to have police scanners around her house so she could listen to... I used to ask her why she didn't. She said, I like to know what's going on in the community. Like, really? That's your way of monitoring the community happenings is to hear who's getting arrested for beating up their wives? That's great. But they're just... You know, it has this... It has like this Knight Rider LED display sweeping back and forth. And then, you know, when it finds a signal, it stops there. And then you hear this really brief snippet of some cop saying... you know, on the 28th of the blah, 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 and it used to scare the crap out of me as a kid because the sound quality is so bad. They're all speaking in code, but you can tell it's some nefarious shit going down somewhere not that far away. Anyway, I just hated it. I always turned them off when I was a kid.
Perhaps you'll most definitely maybe dial the Wii Remote speaker down should you ever be privileged
enough. It just
made
me think of that.
Should you ever be privileged enough to play this game in North America?
Other than that, the
early stages are quite slow because there's a lot of cutscenes. I was really surprised at how long I was actually watching the game for, and they're not particularly brilliant. It's a bit Resident Evil level, sort of voice acting and stuff.
Wait, which Resident Evil?
Resident Evil.
Oh,
2,
like a Jibble Sandwich.
Yeah, the early kind of stuff. It's a bit rough, and I don't know. I mean, like James has alluded to, maybe some people get into the campy kind of element of it.
Yeah,
it's definitely not a parody. I mean, it's not ironic. It's just kind of bad.
No, I don't think that particular team is capable of irony. I've never seen them.
Perhaps not. So there's a lot of that, and then there's a lot of tutorials. Because it's using all these different aspects, the whole first few levels of the game is like, okay, this is how you do this kind of gameplay. This is how you do that kind of gameplay. With some really amusing explanations, like press Z to take a deep cleansing breath. it's very... It almost teeters on the border of game tutorial to in-flight safety movie. At times, it's very very.
That seems appropriate, though. You know,
and then I suppose it could be construed that way. And then towards the end of the sort of first 3 hours, I was playing it. The shooting sections, which really are the action in the game, the gameplay in the game, they were starting to get a bit more interesting after just being a total pushover and nothing more than introduction early. But the third person stuff is terrible. It's awful.
Good.
I mean, it's so bad. I mean, there was one particular part where you had to sort of recruit people to push a bus to sort of get it to get an exit clear from a park, but the only thing is it's completely on fire. Basically, you
that
had to
sense.
Convince people to this noble cause by speaking to them in the right order. So it's like, if you spoke to a woman, it's like, do you want to save these people that are trapped? And she's like, no, I don't see my brother anywhere around here, so sorry. And then, so you'd have to just walk across the other side of the fire, talk to
fuck
the brother,
you,
and then walk across the fire again, which any time you actually catch flames yourself, you have to waggle the two parts of the controller to put yourself out.
I love
and
this
then,
game already.
And then you talk to them, and then eventually, after doing this like 3 times with different pairs of people, you'll push the bus, and that's the end of the... It's just terrible. I mean, it's padding.
This sounds to me like it was a few inches away from being like a great parody game, but it takes itself too seriously.
Yeah,
you remember what they did with Bug Island when they brought it to America? They sort of made it a parody of itself.
I think if they
hand
this over to the
right
localization
team, that makes sense, and it makes
team.
It almost palatable when you know, like when it's literally making fun of itself.
Yeah, see, I think
it's
maybe,
okay to laugh at it. You can be entertained.
Yeah, maybe
more by
they
it,
could
when
have.
It
they might have
so
done
seriously.
Better. They might have done better. One thing it made me think of in terms of the padding part was like what people talk about: No More Heroes. that it's, you know, you have the mundane tasks and the open world
that
stuff
are just
that really,
waggle, really.
That really only serves to kind of like pad the game and the action's the action. And I think the thing is that this is a bit like that, except it doesn't have any of that irony of being, you know, it just is mundane and not fun to play. And also, it's a much bigger part of the game, I would have thought. I mean, I haven't played No More Heroes, but from what I've heard from Johnny and James and all the reviews, it seems like they are relatively. Whereas this is a lot, you know, you are switching between fighting on the one hand and that on the other, that kind of thing, all the time. And it's just, it's disjointed, it's not very cohesive, it just doesn't feel good. And really, just that you prefer to get on with the gun battles, which weren't that promising, but at least it was like gameplay, you know.
Yeah. Well, Steven has it as well. He has the Japanese version, and he doesn't seem very enthusiastic.
I mean,
about
I have
it.
To say,
he actually repeated
Steven's
everything you said.
Yeah, I wrote up my impressions. It was all done before I saw Steven's, and then I read his,
suck
and
it,
I was it was like he was me. I mean, some of the phraseology is the same. I mean, it's got. Yeah.
Did he edit yours by any chance?
No, I edited his. And mine have not been edited at this point.
It sounds like it was just pushed out the door. Like, just they just
I
wanted to end the
I think at some point it was like, yeah, let's just get this out. You know, it was a troubled project.
Cut your losses.
And at some point
it could
just
very
said,
well be that Nintendo paid a lot of money for Monolith Soft, and there's a whole lot of talent backed up in there, including teams that worked on some pretty big games. And I think that they're like, okay, putting them on a third-person action-adventure was a dumbass idea.
Yeah.
Let's get them done so they can make an RPG, which this console needs.
Yeah, I think at some point it was a case of, you know, obviously it was troubled and they must have done a certain amount to try and dig it out, although it doesn't necessarily show the hallmarks of that having been done productively, at least. And then at some point said, let's just cut our losses, get it out there in certain territories,
but you know,
and that's
you know,
that.
But Monolith
we
is,
better, I think we better move on, James.
Well, I want to say one thing, though.
What's that?
When this game was first announced that it was Monolith making it, I was kind of like, what? And now that I've seen the impressions and things, I realize that, yeah, it made no sense that this company made this game.
Yeah.
At all. Because, I mean,
I still think it was a mistake for Nintendo to buy them.
If they were doing what they do, because there are some developers on there with a very strong
pedigree. If they
were
doing what they do, they'd be making Baten Kaitos 3 and it would sell 50,000 copies
worldwide.
Baten
Kaitos is a good game, though.
I'm not arguing
about
that.
The commercial.
I haven't played them, so I can't say one way or the other, but they're not hit makers.
No, they make
I don't really understand the reasoning behind buying a studio like
well,
this.
Well, they bought it because of the people who work for that studio, including a great many of the staff from Squaresoft who are on the Chrono projects.
Well, what are those people doing now?
Baten Kaitos.
I mean,
because seriously, all right. Well, we got to move on. okay. Dun dun dun. Nintendo DSi.
Yay.
New version of the DS. It's a little it's a little longer than the DS Lite, but it's thinner because they took out the Game Boy Advance cartridge.
That pisses me off.
And
that's kind of lame.
Well,
I think
I can understand
fine.
Why they did it, but it's just kind of lame.
Guitar Hero on tour, gone. Can't play it.
I think it was time. And also, I don't want to play Guitar Hero on tour. I've played it.
Yeah.
That's no loss for me.
I mean, let's be
that's
honest
no
as well.
Loss.
There's some of the reason for why we're seeing this in Japan is because there are so many DS Lites out there.
Yeah.
So it's not as if people's... Right. It's not as if it's retroactively removing the GBA slots from other DSs.
Exactly.
You know, there's going to
be
plenty of chances.
That's the thing. I mean, I can...
If you play a lot of Guitar Hero on tour, then just don't buy a DSi.
I mean, I think
what if you want the cameras, plural?
Yeah.
I understand
it's not... You know, it's slightly less flexibility, but in the end, I mean, I don't really think... A lot of these games are the fancy kind of peripherals, like what the Tony Hawk's going to have, the motion-sensing GBA cartridge.
They're mostly very gimmicky and not
Also, they're not the most portable, I don't think. So, you know, you could be quite happily just play that on your DS Lite at home, and then, because it's got all its sort of enhanced Wi-Fi stuff and whatnot, take your DSi with you on the road.
Yeah.
So,
if you want a backup, go buy a DS Fat, because by the time DSi comes out, you probably get a Fat for $50 at the most. So, I mean, that could be your backup. Keep it at home. Use it for, you know, whatever.
I mean, I guess the
system.
Problem I have with
it
is...
I guess the
problem I have
go
with
ahead,
it
John.
Is the fact that it's like, I don't really see the reason why they removed it, aside from making it slimmer.
Yeah. That's it.
There's really no reason.
Well, actually, I was going to say it's not really that much slimmer. Yeah. I'm kind of disappointed that it's still as thick as it is, considering they took that much depth out of it, you know? So I'm kind of curious as to what exactly is constituting that much thickness remaking.
Well, I suppose, what have we got? Let's run through it. You've got the SD card slot, you've got the bigger screens, you've got obviously the two cameras, one on the outside of the clamshell, one on the inside, sort of where the mic is currently.
Yeah, well, let me just clarify that. I'm pretty sure these are not two separate cameras. It's one camera with two lenses.
So
it's not like totally not redundant hardware. It's the same CCD. It's, you know, it's the same electronics. It just has two lenses.
I mean, the two lenses thing is still kind of like, huh? Okay.
Well, I mean, it has one so you can point the camera
at. I understand why they did it, but I don't feel like it was that big of a deal. Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
No.
It's just a weird... It has two screens and two cameras. It's basically just a gimmick.
Basically just sort of danced around. What are the features of the DSi?
Well, we're getting to them one at a time, James. Dancing around. You brought up the cameras. I was going to wait.
Yeah, I was hoping that would lead to discussion of the features.
Yes, okay. We've got cameras, and they're 0.3 megapixel cameras.
My cell phone is still mind-blowing to me.
Because one of the things that was mentioned was the idea of, you know, you've got the SD card slot. So it's like, oh, look, you could take a picture, put it on your SD card, obviously, in the DSi.
Except that picture would look like ass.
And then put it in your Wii and mess around with it on the photo channel. Even blown up to standard definition, it would look appalling.
No, it won't. That's the thing. 0.3 megapixels comes out to 640 by 480 resolution, which is the maximum that the Wii can display. So here's the deal. The reason you want a camera with high megapixels is for when you print it, okay? Because then you get closer and closer to the infinite resolution of a film camera, right? So if you're going to look at it on a very large screen, okay, you're not going to be printing any pictures that you take with a DSi. You're just not, okay? I don't think they're going to re-release the Game Boy camera printer for this thing. You're not ever going to look at it on a screen larger than your Wii, most likely. Although, technically, you could, because you can transfer these to the photo channel, and then from there, you could mail it to yourself if you have, like, your cell phone or your PC connected to your Wii.
Hell yes.
It's possible to do that, but almost nobody does that.
Or you could just put them on your SD card and read them.
These cameras are, obviously, like, the cheapest possible thing they could put in there. And the goal of them is to take pictures that you can look at on the DS itself and on the Wii. And for that purpose, they'll be fine. But they're certainly not going beyond that. And honestly, I think it probably wouldn't have cost Nintendo very much more money to put in more powerful camera. And then, you know, it's not gonna make them look worse on the screens that you have if you take a higher resolution picture, but it would give you more options as to what you could do with them once you take it off of Nintendo's platforms. But obviously they aren't interested in that, and that's why it sort of makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
Well, all they've shown so far with the camera that you can really do with it is take pictures and, like, manipulate them on the touchscreen and do little silly things with them. But I think it could be parlayed into some kind of video chat feature for the Wii. You know, if you're hooking up the DS to the Wii wirelessly, then you should be able to take video or, you know, of yourself and maybe do it that way, or even video chat over just the DS if it has the bandwidth for it. I don't know.
Well, they've talked about expanded sort of Wi-Fi, you know, that it's going to be much more effective than it was before.
Yeah, I think they probably mean faster and in a larger range.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought hopefully it would make some of the sort of, you know, the wireless play a bit smoother, but beyond that, I assume it's some of the stuff they've got in Japan where it sort of links up to hotspots and you can, like, get information, like, you know, about, like, whatever it may be, like public transport times or whatever.
I don't really see that being a compelling feature, and I don't really see it happening with any kind of saturation outside of Japan. I mean,
yeah,
Japan,
well, but
is
this is a very,
I mean,
this is a very Japan-centric device now, and
true.
Going forward, I mean, obviously, there's many reasons why it's not. I mean, I think obviously Nintendo of America had to say something about it at their event. But, you know, if this was the pre-internet era or whatever, they'd be quite happy to pretend it doesn't exist, because obviously
they couldn't have been very happy about discussing this.
Yeah,
because it's going to hurt sales of the Lite. I mean, it will. I think it will affect the sales.
I mean, I think there's a limit to how much it can hurt, in all fairness, because the people they're selling...
Yeah, there is.
There's the people... A lot of the people they're selling lights to at this point are not necessarily going to be people that savvy or, you know, following it in such detail that they're aware that there's a future version coming out, well, what may well be almost... You know, could be as late as a year hence. In the US.
Yeah. Right, and of course, it doesn't necessarily make sense to wait if you don't have a light yet, because the DSi is not a strictly better system. It does have problems like removing the GBA slot, which, if you didn't own a Game Boy Advance, that could be a big selling point. It's backwards compatibility with 1,000 games.
Exactly.
So that could be something that you're like, I'm not going to wait for that. I don't want that one, you know? And it's going to be more expensive.
I got a question. What are the odds that they had mentioned the next feature, so I'm going to bring it up, is the ability to have downloadable content on the system stored on the.
I think that's the only worthwhile feature.
You've got internal storage,
in my opinion.
What are the odds we now have handheld downloadable games coming to the DS?
The odds are 100%.
Well, they're doing
because they announced that.
I mean, classic handheld systems. Now,
you mean virtual console for DS?
Handheld virtual console. Yes.
Right. That has not been announced, but. Obviously, it's got to be in consideration right now.
Especially because they took out the GBA slot.
Yeah. Now, maybe you can download GBA games.
Yes.
You know? So it's completely feasible. GBA games are not that big.
You know,
so
I wonder what the pricing would be.
There are Game Boy Color.
Well, they've
games.
Already announced the pricing structure,
ten,
haven't they?
Ten
so
bucks?
You're going to have
for GBA,
DS.
I'd say 10 bucks.
I was just going to say that they've already announced a pricing structure that anything would have to fit into, presumably. So it's like you've got free, 200 points, and then...
Yep, that's for DSiWare.
But if they're making the point of sort of establishing a framework now, like very specific kind of things, that if they did then introduce downloadable games later on that were from classic things, it might just fit into that, and it would probably be in that sort of... I doubt it would be the premium one, which is 800, so it'd probably be more in that 500 kind of range.
For like old black and white and maybe Game Boy Color games, I agree, but for GBA games, it's going to be
more in the $8 to $10 range, I think they may work up to that sort of more gradually.
Right.
Quite possibly.
Well, that's all speculative, because the pricing structure that you're referring to, I think it's actually really weird that they even announced that, because they didn't really announce any games
or anything
for the Brain Age.
They said you can download the first two Brain Ages, which I think is genius, and here's why. Obviously, they've already sold so many millions of copies in Japan. Here's the thing I like about this idea. People who already own Brain Age are going to buy it again for download, and I would, because now you have it on your system all the time and you don't have to take the freaking game card around with you. So it makes the whole thing more portable. And for me, Brain Age is something that, like, I might actually want to pull out and play for 5 minutes totally randomly outside of whatever game I'm currently playing through, like Dragon Quest IV. So having it on the system, you know, it's just like having, like, WiiWare stuff. What's nice is you don't have to mess with discs, right? You turn on the system, you don't even necessarily know what you're going to play. You just browse through your collection and say, oh, yeah, I want to do that one right now. Yeah. That's perfect for Brain Age.
That additional accessibility is very valuable, and more valuable on a handheld console than it is with Wii, even.
Absolutely.
So it's very, very much makes sense. And it's an interesting question now, in terms of the weird thing about DSi, of course, is that it is going to segment the market a bit, which is something they do with Wii Motion Plus as well. So it seems like Nintendo have got confident enough about their position that they're willing to do some of these things, like where they split up the market a bit they hadn't been before. And I guess
if you're in a Sega Genesis 32X kind of situation, it doesn't make sense. If you're in a Wii or DS,
they are from a position of strength. But I think one way
Sony segmented the market when they introduced the DualShock on PlayStation 1. It wouldn't be the first time. Microsoft did it from the start with the 360 and the hard drive.
Yeah, exactly. The different SKUs and the backwards compatibility nonsense with PS3 and all this sort of stuff.
And it hasn't hurt them that much, you know.
No, but what I was going to say is one way they could rationalize it is by actually keeping almost all the stuff that's really DSi specific to the downloadable medium.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what they're gonna do. Any
physical game card that you would buy would work on any DS, but obviously the thing, but obviously it's the only thing that can download games, and then it'll be the only thing that'll be able to play those games that could use the camera, that could use all the other features it's got. So I mean, that in that sense, I think it's quite shrewd that they can then tap into this additional revenue stream in Japan without completely cannibalizing the DS Lite sales. Because for all the stuff people say, oh well, you know, it's because the PSP's been outselling it. It's like the PSP has stopped outselling it months ago. I mean, it's still regularly the DS Lite, almost every week, the top-selling platform in Japan by a ratio of 2-to-1, 3-to-1, or better. I mean, it hasn't stopped selling. So even though the key stat is the penetration ratio that Nintendo of America talked about, the fact that it is in about 1 in 2 Japanese households at this point is something ridiculous. Phenomenal. And that there is diminishing
returns. If you think there are a lot of iPods around...
Oh, the DS is amazing.
Shit. The DS, I mean, iPod honestly pales in comparison to the DS, especially if you look at Japan as a case study. It's really frightening how many DSs are in Japan and how many people have one.
I mean, they're probably still selling DS Fats, right?
Yeah.
I think they're actually making them anymore.
No, I think there's probably a reasonably robust secondary market, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I remember a full
year after the Lite came out in Japan, Fats were still selling briskly because you couldn't
get very competitive trade-in value on them as well just because of the sheer the crazy demand. But obviously in America it's a different picture, because for as hot as they've been selling, that stat to the penetration ratio is more like 1 in 5. So they've
Which
got a long way to go.
Phenomenal for
there's
anything.
Just a lot more people in America.
Yeah, this is what you're talking 300 plus million people versus over 120 million or whatever it is in Japan. So it is very different. But at the same time, if you look at the trend, the DS Lite sales have actually been accelerating both in America and in Europe. So it's very understandable that even though, like I said, I don't think the DSi by its very nature will absolutely cannibalize the sales of the DS Lite. I think they've come up with a reasonable strategy to sort of manage that by A, the nature of the system, and B, the fact they're going to release it a lot later in America. Although, curiously, they've already said they're planning to release it in spring in Europe, which sounds early to me. I mean, if anything, if you think of Japan being at the front of the line with how quickly the DS took off, North America is next, and then Europe is last, and yet we're going to get this before America? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
The continuing odd trend of Europe getting things before America, you know, that is probably due to the weak dollar. They stand to make more money.
Yeah, I suppose
selling it
that
in
is
Europe,
and that is still an issue. Although there is a certain amount of depreciation of European currencies now, not so much the euro though, which is the most important one.
Well, anyway, that's really boring financial crap. But I think there could be new DS games that have like optional bonus features if you're playing on a DSi.
Yeah, that's how I think it'll work.
It kind of goes both ways, because there'll probably also continue to be games that have bonus features if you have something in the GBA slot. Yeah. You know, that's happened a number of times as well, where you know it's a sequel to some GBA game, and if you put that in the GBA slot, you unlock some extra character or whatever.
I'm curious how those games, if there could be any issue with those games not even seeing a GBA slot there.
I kind of doubt it. It'll just treat it like it's empty, I'm sure.
Yeah. I guess one of the interesting things about this hardware is one thing that's not in it, which is an accelerometer or some sort of motion control. When you consider the iPod, the iPod gaming platforms, and then, of course, just the fact of, you know, the Wii and, you know, that brand associated Nintendo's got with motion controls at this point, that it doesn't have it, I think is really cool.
Well, I think that would split the market too much, though, because...
Yeah, I think they're probably waiting for the real.
Yeah,
next
because this is still
handheld.
You know, very much.
This
is
clearly just an iteration.
I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, it looks almost exactly like a DS Lite from the outside.
Except
I mean, they are very much. You know, the DS Lite is still so hot that this, even though it's a little separation, is very much trying to capitalize on that. Really trying to get people to buy them again. Essentially, I mean, it's a pretty
minor upgrade. Like honestly, if you broke down all the things that they've added to the DSi, any one of them by themselves, I would have to laugh at. I mean, if you put them all together, I think it's worth upgrading, probably with
the exception of the download, the digital download kind of stuff.
The download's the only part.
That
by
itself is an interesting component.
That's really a wait and see thing, though. We got to see how that goes.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you don't know what they're going to do.
One feature we've left out is that it also plays media, if I recall correctly, right?
It plays AAC files.
Yeah.
So the worst worse.
So it's basically,
yeah, it's worse. Very, very strange audio that it doesn't play codec. MP3. Yeah,
but for whatever, this is something that Nintendo's exhibited.
And if you're listening on the AAC, F you.
But that's just like the Wii though. The Wii plays the photo too. They switched that over.
The photo channel went from
photo
MP3.
Channel, which I think drives a lot of the stuff that's
in
this.
But the photo channel used to play MP3s, and they took it out
and
for what appears to be a licensing issue.
They gave you the option to download or not an update, which would then change it just
right.
The AAC.
Yeah,
and the bizarre thing is, you can only have one or the other.
Yeah,
and what is the issue? It's not that hard to get an MP3 license.
Yeah, I know.
It's virtually not even a license at this point. It's become so diluted. It really can't cost more than, what, $1 per unit or less? So what's the deal? AAC support is fine. I'm surprised that's even included. That's good.
Apple basically gives that away
AAC,
for penetration purposes.
You have to have MP3 support. Mm. You have to have MP3 support. It's just fucking ridiculous not to have that.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You have at least MP3, and everything else is icing on the cake.
A million dollars.
But you can't not do MP3s. If it's
$1 a unit.
Drives me crazy.
Let's just say it's $1 a unit. And there's how many Wii units in the market?
Yeah, but if they make $10 unit profit,
that's 10% of the profit gone just to accommodate a feature most people aren't going to use.
Well, they're not going to use it anyway because it's only supporting AAC, James. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. There's no point in including this shit if you leave out the most popular format in the world.
It seems like it's only useful insofar as people may just have like MP3s or just songs on the SD card, and then it's like, oh well, if I put it in the DS, it'll play it on there, so that's kind of convenient. But then if you've got to have one sole format to do that, it takes away that casual convenience element and renders it largely redundant as far
well,
as
so well, they did.
What is Nintendo
going to
do? Give you a CD-ROM with an AAC converter program on it so you can put it in your computer and convert all your shit and then put it on an SD card and then plug it into your DSi? Give me a fucking break.
But they don't care because the only thing this is made for is to work with the Wii, which uses AAC.
Yeah, I guess.
That's all Nintendo gives a shit about.
It's just that synchronicity.
People use the iPod and its user interface is so fucking unuser-friendly when it comes to uploading media that I don't think people care anymore. It is an abomination to have to put
Mike's
screen.
What are you talking
over
about? You drag things over to it.
No, because
what
then it actually
about,
goes
James?
Through this stupid conversion process, and then you have to sync things.
It's
stupid as hell.
You're talking out of your ass. It doesn't convert anything, and it doesn't even sync it. My iPod has never synced because it's too small to sync with my computer, so I drag over whatever I want to, and then I delete it when it gets full, and I put other stuff on there. Mm. It's no problem.
Owned.
Yep. Anyway. And it doesn't convert anything because the iPod plays MP3. Obviously.
Yeah.
True.
I honestly don't think it's that big a deal because I don't think they really ever intended us to.
Well,
it's
the whole
just
feature is entirely
feature.
Piffling.
It's a completely worthless feature.
It is.
If it doesn't support MP3, no one will use it.
But dude, come on,
I'm
dude.
Saying.
But you can change the pitch of the sounds and how quickly
God.
They play back.
That's right.
Yes.
Incredibly
it,
useful.
Let me push down my boner before we proceed. I mean, what is that shit?
I know.
You can change the pitch of the. It's just pointless. There's so much pointless shit in the DSi. The cameras are pointless, really. Unless they show me
any.
Something that's actually worthwhile. That's the thing. Nintendo always does this. They announce something, and maybe it'll be cool down the road, but when you don't show any games
like
for it, you don't
DS
show any useful or interesting
shown.
Applications for it, everybody's left scratching their head thinking, what the fuck is wrong with
don't
you?
Forget,
why would you
I mean,
do this?
Don't forget, when we're talking about this, to some extent, there's a natural sort of inclination to talk about it as being something quite far in the future, because it will be in America, but the fact is it's coming out on November 1st or something in Japan,
yeah,
right?
Something
weeks away.
Like that.
this thing is finished.
Yeah, so there is not as if whatever big plans they've got for
how they're going to utilize
the features.
They're going to have like some sort of like kind of video-ish PictoChat where you'll be able to incorporate pictures and stuff. DictoChat.
Have they said that, or are you just guessing?
No, actually, well, that's in the screenshots. I mean, I think built into the DSi firmware is some sort of like
video game are they gonna put in the ads with it? What's their big game in Japan?
I think it's not gonna be downloadable stuff. But even with the DS Lite,
they had here's game, here's DS Lite. Look at them, aren't they sexy?
Yeah, pretty much.
There's gonna be something.
It'll probably be Brain Age, New
56.
Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. And honestly, at this to be fair, you're at a different point from where you were pushing the DS Lite to where you're pushing this.
The DS Lite came out
elevated to a point where I just think the idea of a new color probably sell pretty robustly.
Well, that's the whole thing. Somebody on the forums brought up that these features are really going beyond. You know, like as part of kind of like the Blue Ocean thing, it's like, you know, these are going beyond. These are features meant for people that aren't even interested in the DS at all at this point, because all those people that all the early adopters have bought it, all of the people that, you know, kind of found out through somebody else that it's kind of cool have bought it, and so now all these features are aimed at people that don't really know anything about it and need it for something else other than what it's actually designed
well,
to
look,
do.
Well, look, I might buy...
Okay, but here's the problem with that, is that it doesn't actually do those things well.
I agree.
You know, it's a shitty camera,
yeah,
it's a shitty media player.
I honestly think it's more
Maybe
of a...
it's a good web browser, which they're now including the Opera web browser.
It's
and
not.
It supposedly runs fast now.
Yeah.
Because
but it's...
the original DS browser ran so slowly that it was completely
pointless. There's
a
great news post from an E3 about someone trying to write a news story on it.
That was me.
Yeah,
that was me. It took me about 20 minutes.
It literally just says,
I'm
writing this on the DS new browser. It's really slow. And that's like the whole story.
Yeah. I actually stood there and did that at E3. I wasted about 20 minutes typing that out. So, yeah, if the browser actually works well, that's a cool feature. That kind of eats into like the iPhone kind of appeal, where you can use your internet practically anywhere these days, anywhere that has a Wi-Fi hotspot. That's really cool. I mean, if I have the DS in my pocket already, I might actually bust it out and use it for internet if the browser works well and if it's fast enough.
I would,
so I'm totally
cool
with that.
Browsing it on my phone sucks.
My problem with selling the DSi to people who don't really want to play games is that, you know, Nintendo's a game company, and they used to say, we only do games. With GameCube, they were like, you know, it doesn't play DVDs.
Yeah.
We're not into that. And now that they're trying to push out beyond gaming, my concern is they're not actually good at doing things other than gaming.
Well, see, I honestly
and
think
that they're putting all these features into their hardware
I really see.
I mean, think about the stuff that Wii does, like the Weather Channel. Fucking sucks.
The Weather Channel is balling. You can spin the world and like people go flying off. It's crazy
shit.
Dude,
it updates about once every 23 hours.
Yeah. I don't need to know the weather now.
Even the Wii Opera browser is not that good. So they're adding all these like non-gaming functions that are ass. So like, how is this going to sell to people
there's a couple
if
of things.
If I'm in Japan and I've got $200 in my pocket and I want something to do some of the stuff the DSi does, I'd buy a fucking phone.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the Japanese
well, I mean,
phones
I think
for that price
this.
Will do all of this and way better with an 8-megapixel camera and everything.
Yeah.
There's two issues here. I think the first, it is going to be a tougher sell in America. I mean, it really is. I think where it might just help in Japan is really just. I think this biggest impact is going to be squeezing further hardware sales out of people who've already bought a DS Lite. People are very attached to the DS Lites. They may have bought multiple DS Lites already, but it's like it's enough to tip them over the edge to buy another one. It's like, I always have my DS with me, but now when I always have it with me, I'll be able
I'll
be able to download games and play those without having to take a pouch full of other games, you know, with me. I'll be able to do this with the web or whatever. Yeah, you know, it's just like it's not a raison d'être in itself, but it's like an extra convenience.
Good term
that just adds on to the fact that people are already they're really attached to it. So I think it's not about reach. It may do in time if it becomes so popular with the sort of the more. The already established DS crowd that it kind of has a viral effect, but I think the first thing it's going to do is just squeeze out a hefty amount of sales in Japan just from those people, and then if it catches on beyond that, great, but the DS is selling so well anyway that's fine. It's going to be profitable, and that's
you
all
know,
it
you know
all
right, I,
well,
I think
to that effect and okay James make your point
I
but
think
we got to move on
depending on the price
soon.
You know, I've said before I have an old DS fat, like a launch day DS fat. Depending on the price this comes out in the US, I might upgrade to it just because I do feel like I need an upgrade from the DS Vat because it hurts to fucking play.
Yeah, you do. It's called the DS Lite and it came out 2 years ago.
But the DS Lite, you know, all it was a smaller, brighter screen.
No.
It's much.
It's about a billion times
better. You really
better.
Can't understand how good the DS Lite is over the original until you own one because. it's kind of mind-blowingly better.
See,
it's like from the GBA to the GBA SP.
I had the old GBA.
Now I can actually play
it. It's like a fat ugly chick to a supermodel.
I had a launch day GBA, and that got me through the entire GBA era.
So that's just so sad.
James is just absolutely
committed. You don't actually know true happiness, do you?
Get out!
The only reason I would even consider upgrading to this DS is the possibility of the downloadable content.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Right. All right, so just a last word on this, and we have to move on. We have so much more news. But I remember when this first came out, Greg, you said that basically this was like a Game Boy Color kind of stopgap.
Was it me or was it somebody else? I thought it was you.
It could have been someone else. I could have sworn it was you.
Somebody said it around us.
Yeah. Someone said
this is kind of like the Game Boy Color of the DS.
I would say it's not even that much because at least the Game Boy Color added
I would say it's more like the Game Boy Micro.
No, it's not that bad.
I mean, the micro,
I don't mean that as a simple insult, but when Greg is talking about squeezing a few extra sales...
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I do. Appealing
to a slightly different audience that doesn't really care about games.
No, because the Game Boy Micro is a fucking disaster.
The Game Boy Micro just disappeared off the map. I don't think this is going to be...
I think this is going to last like a year before the Micro is relatively more successful
I think this is in Japan also, and I think this will be
relatively
the same
speaking
thing.
In that it's sold.
They show it in America and it just doesn't even make sense, right? Yeah. In Japan, maybe it does, but I really think in terms of the effect on the market, in terms of sales, the price. I mean, it's a more expensive version of something you already own that does pretty much the same thing. That's not Game Boy. That's not Game Boy Color. That's Game Boy Micro.
But the thing is, that's all I'm saying. The Micro didn't add any new
color
features.
Had
the Micro did
software.
Nothing new.
It did nothing new. It just did everything smaller. That's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And with a very tiny screen.
With a really nice screen.
Right. And the DSi, to me, it doesn't really... In terms of gaming, it doesn't do anything new. At least not that they've shown us so far. They've really got a long way to go to convince me that this makes any sense. The potential
be more like GBC is if it actually the downloadable part creates some experiences that you obviously wouldn't be able to get. Really compelling experiences.
Well, here's one question about that, though.
Because the GBC had some great exclusive games that if you never upgraded to that and you just went straight to GBA, you might have missed out on. And it could be
The Game Boy Color was twice as powerful as the Game Boy Pocket.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the difference in the platform. Game Boy Color was a distinct platform with full backwards compatibility.
What if this is more of a rejiggered version of the same thing that already was. Is it possible that Nintendo would hold back standard release things just to justify the downloadable content?
What?
Nintendo could put emphasis on the downloadable content just to force people to upgrade the hardware.
Actually shift development projects or just like marketing budgets
or at least resources and budgets.
To the downloadable side versus retail DS games is what.
Well,
yes.
I'm sure they would make more money.
I think it's going to be more like a WiiWare situation.
You see, I still think the DS itself, as it stands, is so powerful right now. And like I said, if you don't buy into this notion that it's somehow fallen past the PSP, and it's still outselling it now. You know, PSP had a surge. So I think that core success is too precious for them to mess with it too much.
The PSP had its biggest titles come out in like a 4-month period, and that's where their surge came from.
Yeah,
and those games are gone.
Okay. We really have to move on. I knew that would be the longest discussion. These next ones shouldn't take quite as long, but we absolutely have to talk about the Wii Storage solution.
I put solution in quotation marks.
The Wii Storage fixing.
So basically, Iwata announced that there are two elements to this so-called storage solution. The great thing is you don't have to buy anything new. The bad part is it doesn't actually fix the problem. So there are two components to this. The transfers back and forth from the SD card to the Wii onboard memory are going to be sped up somehow.
Magic.
We don't know how much. We don't know how they're doing that. We haven't seen it in action, but there is some sort of vague language to that effect that moving things around is going to be faster.
And also
going to
be made easier.
The
two-step process, it used to be copying, and then you'd have to go back and blow it away. Now, I think that will only be one step.
So it'll just take twice as long, hopefully.
But I think what's perhaps most irksome about this, instead of it's not so much a total solution, is that, why didn't this happen sooner? I mean, when it's something that's so minor,
such a simple procedure, they really should have done it from the beginning.
It probably will be more convenient. but it just demonstrates the fact that you could have granted us this greater level of convenience 2 years ago.
It wasn't a problem two years ago. If they actually listened to us, I mean, this should have been taken care of a long time ago. Let me get to the other part of the plan, Greg, before we go deep into analysis. The other part of the plan, for those who don't know, is that when you go to the Wii Shop channel, you can now download programs, WiiWare or Virtual Console, directly to the SD card. The benefit, of course, being that if your onboard memory is full, you don't have to back all the way out of the shop channel, delete some stuff, and then go back in the shop channel and re-download it or retry the download. So now, if your onboard memory is full, you can just download it directly to the SD card. Of course, you still can't execute from the SD card, so you're still going to have to move it. You're still going to have to go clean the fridge and move things back in there, but at least it eliminates some of the backtracking. I've definitely had that problem multiple times where I got to the shop channel and it said, you don't have enough room, get the fuck out of here.
And then you have to spend
10 or 15 minutes going and dealing with the shit before you go back to the shop. So this is going to eliminate that problem. You're still going to have to do some memory management after that before you can actually play your game, though.
But you know... Yeah.
So that's the plan. And this is coming spring of 2009 because they've got all their top shelf programmers working on it as fast as they can.
This is the problem. When you wait this length of time to do anything about it, then people expect it to be a far more comprehensive solution than this.
If they had done this 3 months after the Wii launch, I'd be great.
Yeah,
two years later, I'm like, this is
basically
it?
It's taken them 2 years to add a move button.
Yes, indeed.
Pretty much,
And obviously, they haven't been working on it this whole time. That's the problem. They completely ignored it for 2 years.
Because to them, it's not a problem.
Even though there are plenty of people telling them about the problem. That's the issue here. It's not that they aren't doing enough. It's that they waited so fucking long and now they're doing it. It's almost too late.
I mean,
you still should be able to execute things off the SD card. We know it's possible with Homebrew. I'm sure you can do it even with the encryption if you just use better encryption procedures, but obviously that's a little too much work
for
Nintendo.
We tell you what you want, kind of effort to them.
You know, when this was first coming out on the live blogs, because I was sort of keeping up with them at work, but just vaguely, so when I got home I was still shocked. I caught part of this announcement and I thought, oh my god, they finally fixed it. And then I got home, and I didn't really get to read the news until we started recording the podcast. And if you had been able to see the podcast, there'd have been this random outburst where I said, fuck them! And that was when I caught on they didn't actually fix it.
Well, I know it sounds like we're looking gift horse in the mouth because they are addressing some of the issues.
I mean, like, it is going to be more convenient, but they're the most basic issues.
I'm not totally pissed off. I'm glad they're doing something. I'm glad they're not trying to sell me a $100 hard drive for no reason. I've already bought an SD card. I know it works if they'll just let me use it, and they're going to let me use it more than they were before. So I'm happy about that, but it just feels like a really half measure.
It just feels like
they just didn't go all the way to really address this the way it should be addressed.
Well, you know,
but I'm glad they're doing something about it. It's better than nothing, which is what we've gotten for the past 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years too many.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the storage solution. Look for that later. We also got a brief mention. I don't think this is a big deal, but I thought it was interesting to bring up the WeSpeak channel.
We'll now
channel.
Be recording the
this
podcast
something...
on WeSpeak channel.
Yep, that's it.
That's right. This is something you can download if you buy the WeSpeak microphone this fall. So it comes with Animal Crossing for $10, over the normal price of a game, or you can buy it separately for $30. And if you buy it, you can go to the Wii Shop channel, you'll get a code or something, and you can download the WeSpeak channel for free. So what this does is basically like four-party chat. Online voice chat. Yeah. So basically, it's you go to a channel on your Wii, you click on that, you're not playing a game, but you're just looking at a screen with everybody's Mii's on it, and you can chat with other people who you've traded Wii system friend codes to.
Yeah, see, now that's the thing. I'm not so sure whether this is Wii system codes or not. Because in
well, you think they're going to have friend
well,
codes for the Wii
well,
channel?
In the European. Well, in
the
Europe.
Ultimate dick move.
No, well, let me first start. In the European press release, it was referred to as private friend codes. It was not referred to as... The Wii number has never been referred to in any context as a friend code, as far as I'm aware.
So when they say private friend codes,
that means something different to me. It's not entirely unambiguous. You know, it's not clear, but to me, that means a separate friend code. And if you think about it, there is a rationale from the point of view that obviously people have exchanged Wii system cut numbers. What can they do? Well, they can exchange text and they can exchange pictures and things, but voice chat is another level of communication that parents may not be comfortable. They might be comfortable with their son or daughter having the code to text somebody over Wii, but they might not be so comfortable with that then straight away blanket applying to voice chat. And so a separate code may be just that, you know, because Nintendo is so careful about this sort of thing.
But
may
here's
well be
the deal.
Warranted
you can't
from
actually use voice chat unless you buy the microphone.
Oh, certainly, but I'm just saying
so
they may feel that
if
it would
the
be.
Child,
yeah. I don't think it's. Yeah, I'm not arguing
for
it.
If you buy the microphone, you're kind of consenting to this.
But also, yeah. But to be fair, there's a difference between you may feel comfortable with them texting a certain party of people, but then with voice chat, maybe you might want to limit it further. I'm not arguing that this is warranted in an absolute sense. I'm arguing this is warranted in Nintendo's logic.
In Nintendo's crazy mind.
Yeah. And to me, it would not surprise me at all if, given that, you know, voice chat is, even with this whole speakerphone, socially inclusive aspect to it, is something that they treat very carefully and that they do attach another code to. It just wouldn't surprise me. To me, it's no more or less asinine to do that than it is to have a separate code for, like, Mario Strikers Charged or whatever, which has no communication in it whatsoever. It's more warranted
right.
than that, so...
That's
I
not
mean,
true. I think
so
you need Mario Strikers
just being
Charged
cynical,
to get
in
it
other
on the
words.
To just grab the ball as the goalie and hold
and,
it.
And the point being that that in that press release it said private friend codes. That is the quote.
That
so
is
I would have thought
right.
that
well,
means
that was
codes.
Nintendo of Europe, so... I'm not going to go by that. I definitely see the possibility that that they could do that, but I think it would be completely over the line ridiculous.
That would be a nutbuster.
So, anyway, Wii Speak Channel, it's not the most interesting thing ever. It is a nice thing. It's a nice feature to include if you buy
it's
the microphone.
It's a step in the right
it's
direction,
kind of the kind
like
of
everything Nintendo
and
does these days.
It is, and you have to admit, I mean, they're actually being a little more progressive than some of the other companies. If you think about Xbox 360, this kind of functionality where you can just be on the dashboard and voice chat with your friends is being added in the new Xbox experience
yes.
coming later this mm-hmm. fall, according
which
to Major
is,
Nelson.
Which is the moment
so,
where I remove Ty Shugart as a friend from my Xbox Live account.
Amen, brother.
So, I mean, this is something Xbox 360 hasn't had for the past 3 years. So, I mean, it's not...
It has had voice
chat. It's not
chat.
Like an automatic thing, you know. I mean, it's something that we should be appreciative of. If you buy the Wii Speak... This is something you should download. It's a
well,
nice
thing.
Well,
I mean, what do you think
have,
is a practical use for
yeah,
this? I mean, I can see maybe getting, you know, three of your friends, maybe, you know, planning some. I mean, what game do you think you could maybe?
It's almost like a lobby yeah. outside of any game.
Yeah.
So you can
or,
get in
or maybe
there and
it's
decide
just
what
to
game
do
yeah,
you
yeah,
want
exactly.
to play. Friends.
You could
I
just
mean,
yeah, you could
or
just
or it could be your family. It's a conference call thing. It's like, you know, my family gets together and we all talk over our Wii Speak to your family who's over
and
on the other side,
douches.
You know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a very idyllic kind of thing. I don't think it'll actually be used for that very
you
often,
are a
but
dick.
It's a possibility.
You have no faith in the family, Johnny.
Your family sucks,
right.
bitch.
My family would never sit around a video game console to speak to other people on the other side.
Well,
of
maybe
the
you have a family,
that's
Johnny.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh!
Yes. Okay, so the next story up before we take a quick break is Club Nintendo is finally coming to America. This is the program. Yes, yeah, this is really cool. This is the program they've had in Japan and now Europe for a while, where if you do things on the Nintendo website, if you register your games after you buy them with that little code that comes in, if you take surveys and crap like that, then you build up these like special bonus points basically on the website, and then over time you can redeem those for prizes, and in Japan the prizes are fucking awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, you've got like exclusive DS games that you can't get anywhere else, special controllers for the Wii,
yeah.
special colors of the DS,
yep,
a lot of crazy accessories.
You can get, wasn't there a
you
special,
can get
caps, special edition
t-shirts.
Mario Galaxy soundtrack? Something
yes.
like that. I mean,
yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, like really cool DS stuff. And then in Europe, you can trade them for Wii points to
which
use on Virtual Console
cool.
and WiiWare, right?
But remember when it came out, there was a shop and there was like a limited number of Wii points you could buy and crazy
yeah.
shit like that.
Yeah, the allocation's kind of weird, but the fact is, you can do it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The exchange rate.
Have you ever used that?
Now,
right?
I have done it. Yeah, I've done it. I've traded in, you know, so many. I think it's like 4-1. So like. Say for 4,000 stars, they call them over here, the points that you accumulate,
uh-huh.
Would get you 1,000 Wii points, I think. But the thing is that you'll get to give you an idea of how long it would take to amass that. Typically, when you buy something like a Wii game or so, you get 250 stars.
Oh my god!
Wow.
Okay.
So it would take you a while to amass that.
Yeah. Well, I've already got so many Wii and DS games registered that Cammy said that some of the things you've already registered with the, you know, I mean they sort of already have this database thing on the Nintendo.com website in America where you can register your games. You just don't get anything for them yet.
Yeah.
So basically, they're finally adding in the actual rewards program to what already is there. So basically, she said that you'll be able to carry over. You'll be able to get some points for the things you've already registered. You may not be able to count everything. I don't know what she means by that. Maybe they're not going to include GBA games and stuff like that are older.
Yeah,
but they will give you some credit for the things you've been registering over the past few years, which for me is great because I review a shitload of games. If you guys haven't noticed, I wrote 3 reviews in the past 7 days, so I have a lot of games registered on that website, and I'm gonna rake in some shit when they finally start collecting.
I don't think I've gotten a single game I've got the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, the only game I've gotten so far that I can put on the site.
You should get a huge award for that.
Yeah,
by the way,
should be like 8 million points.
You should just
on its
get,
own.
They should just like sell you Nintendo for like a dollar. Be like, thanks, James.
They should give you the next sequel for free.
I would shoot it. I would literally take a gun and shoot it, and that would be my video review of the game.
Okay, so that's Club Nintendo. It's coming out later this year. We don't have a lot of details what the prizes are going to be or how it's or if you're going to be able to get Virtual Console points, but let's hope. I have good feelings about this. I'm very glad that they're finally going to do that.
Let's also hope that they include more games as eligible to register as part of this. Because right now...
Well, you know, right now it's only first party.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to expand this to third-party games or not. I mean, you know, Nintendo has less incentive to reward you for buying third-party games. Because they're not making as much profit.
They still make the greenbacks,
off of them.
Though.
Sure. Yeah, they make less. So maybe they'll be worth less on the site if you register them. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We have so much news we had to split it in two. So we'll be back, and we'll talk about all the game announcements for Wii and DS that came out of this event. Okay, we're back from the break, and we're going to talk about all the new games that were announced last week, and we'll start with the Wii games, and of course, I had a little bit of trouble deciding which one to start with out of these two, but I went with Punch-Out. It's pretty big. We got a new Punch-Out for Wii. It's coming out first half of 2009, and it looks exactly like a 3D version of the original Punch-Out. I mean, they're the same cartoony graphics. We don't know anything about controls, but I would guess there will be optional support for the balance board in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I would say probably Wii Remote and Nunchuck in your hands and the balance board.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say probably just Wii Remote and Nunchuck, and then probably something with the classic controller.
or with the normal layout of the Wii Remote turned sideways.
Right. And you can tell the game is really early from the video they showed.
Oh,
they showed
yeah.
about 5 seconds of video. There's nothing. It's just a pure black background. So it's like a boxing ring floating in space. You've got just,
that's
you know,
the story.
Little Mac and I guess Glass Joe is who it was.
Yeah.
But
There was another trailer somewhere
King
else,
Hippo.
I think
there was also Von Kaiser was in there, too.
Yeah.
A few other snippets. But
cool.
Yeah, it looks
well,
very,
let's hope they... I hope they're going to create some new characters.
I hope they get
sure
Mike Tyson
well,
back in there. He needs the money.
He does need the money.
I need the money. Get him in there. Get him
in
there
with
voice acting.
Tyson's been clean long enough, right, that they could actually consider him.
No, he's not clean enough. He's got a fucking tattoo on his face.
Well,
it looks like he just...
See, that's the whole thing.
Yeah,
you
but I mean, he's been out of trouble... Relatively
for like 8 days,
for a while.
See, I'd like to see like old Mike and new Mike in there, like you know, new like bite your ear off Mike with the big pad on his face, and then like old Mike
yeah.
with the high top fade. That's what I want to see.
Here's the reason I don't want Mike Tyson in the game, because Punch Out is already so racist that
oh, yeah.
when you put Mike Tyson in there, it could turn out to be like a really explosive, nasty situation that we don't want to
yeah,
have.
Yeah, Punch Out
Honda,
is really, really
is it,
fucking
like a,
stereotypical.
There's no stereotype there.
No, not
you know?
At all.
Yeah, Piston Honda. That's great.
Piston Honda.
Punch Out is so funny for all the wrong reasons. Okay. And in the new one, you see he punches Glass Joe and croissants fly out of his head. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Dude, that makes me happy. But what would you say?
I guess it's innocent in the sense that any racism can be innocent, but that's kind of the crux, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
There are going to be people who say that there are no innocent stereotypes. Everything is harmful. There are people who think that even positive stereotypes, like all Asians are smart. Well, I mean, there's a good argument to be made that that's destructive as well. So I just wonder, how are they going to get this? It's not that it's an ESRB issue. It's a public opinion issue.
Yeah.
How are they going to get this out without people saying something?
There is an unreasonable level of touchiness about stereotypes. I remember, if you remember Watto from Star Wars Episode 1, that was accused of being...
Yeah, I didn't understand
that.
That
was accused
being
of being
stereotype.
An anti-Semitic
yes.
stereotype created by George Lucas. Are you kidding?
Jar Jar was accused of being a...
I mean, that is just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, he's just sort of reacting to something without even thinking it through in the vaguest terms, I suppose. Punch-Out could be on slightly deadly ground. But I guess the more whimsical it is, maybe that'll get around it a bit. But
Yeah, and that's how Star Wars... dealt with it too. There's plenty of racial stereotypes in Star Wars, but they're all transmuted through this window of alien races instead of being human races. So basically what it's saying is, even in Star Wars, you have racism in Star Wars. It's sort of not dealt with directly, but you can see it quite a bit, and even to the sense that there are actually people who defy their stereotypes in Star Wars, like people like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He has the British accent, which is typically associated with the Empire and the evil guys, right?
Yeah.
But obviously he's a good guy, so you have
people
who buck against their races or the stereotypes against them, and there are a lot of other examples of that in Star Wars too.
You can't
argue that there is no racism in Star Wars.
No, but
the
idea that
it's
an anti-Semitic vehicle perpetrated by George Lucas is one of the most ridiculous things ever said in mankind's history.
Right.
But this is to go back to the Punch Out. This has been developed by Next Level, who did the Mario Strikers games and Sega Soccer Slam.
I hadn't heard that.
It sort of seeped out a little later on the side. So, yeah, that's.
No, they're not based in Japan, are they? Are they?
No, I don't think
what,
so.
Canadian
so,
or something?
So,
Canadian
I mean, I enjoyed
American,
the
I mean...
the Soccer Slam game for GameCube. That was fun, and then the two strikers I've played. Yeah, they're good multiplayer games. This will be something quite a bit different, though. And it'd be really.
I want to say Sega Soccer Slam was developed by Black Box.
I don't know whether it was
EA.
A case of the certain members like moved over or something, but there is a connection.
Okay.
There.
Yeah,
I don't know
that
it's literally
that
Next Level that did Sega Soccer Slam.
Yeah.
There's a connection in terms of the heritage of the people that are at Next Level now. So that is literally all I could name of theirs, unfortunately. I don't know much more about it.
I'm curious. We caught wind that this game was being developed before E3. Like pretty well substantiated.
Yeah.
Well, if you want it, if you're asking why it wasn't shown at E3, look how early
it
is now.
Yeah, it probably
is. No, see, this is what I'm getting at.
it's really, really early right now. How much of this could have been that it wasn't really in development when these rumors started coming out?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was like, in development.
It was in very early discussion.
It was probably in early development. I just think they probably didn't really want to sort of dilute the particular message that they had for E3 with something so...
I don't think it was that. If they had more to announce at E3, they would have. But I think a lot of things, including Punch-Out, was probably so early by the time they did E3 that there was still a relatively fair chance that it might be canceled. You know, like when they're
doing prototypes, it's not necessarily complete,
if it's not fun to play, they will cancel it. And so they didn't want to go. They didn't want to show the
because
they didn't want to let people down.
I mean, this is such a glib mention. I mean, it's pretty. You know, it really is. It's practically like concept art in motion. I mean, that's all it is.
Right.
So I mean, I don't know. Maybe they could have announced it at E3 if they really wanted to, but I think they chose not to probably. And
on that note, I don't really think it's coming out in the spring. As early as it looks.
Yeah, I mean, when
like
you've got something as vague as first half, that's eminently slippable. I mean, very much so. I'd just be interested to see what they do with it in terms of, you know, it's not necessarily the most. I mean, Punch-Out's like a boss rush mode, right? Which, modern day standards, is not that much of a game. So, how are they going to increase the sort of breadth of content, what they could do with potential for multiplayer, be it online, maybe?
I think multiplayer could be really fun, especially online, because then you don't have the perspective problem one guy has his back to the screen, the other has his face to the screen. If you do it online, you can just switch it for both people, so it's like you're playing against the computer, except the other guy is a lot less predictable. And in Punch-Out, that's a big deal, because it's so pattern-based.
Yeah, I mean,
the
one-player game, that's the point.
It
would be a fundamental difference, because the one-player game is based on the predictability. It's based on identifying the patterns and exploiting them. Multiplayer would be
but
a very different
thing,
kind of game.
It's not just the patterns, it's also the visual cues.
Yeah, the
these characters and see when they're about to use a certain attack. So what if they develop a system for online multiplayer where your character telegraphs what you're about to do
that's what would be really interesting.
If they
could incorporate,
that could be really cool.
Yeah, if they could incorporate that essence of normal project into a multiplayer, it'd be really different and really interesting, but that's a challenge. I really think that's a challenge. It would be very interesting to see if it is just like a glorified remake with motion controls, or whether it's really something very interesting.
Yeah. All right. So obviously we're excited about Punch-Out. I'm really glad that they did that. The other really big announcement for Wii is Sin and Punishment 2, and I know Greg almost exploded all over himself when he heard about this.
Very excited. We've talked. Because of the anticipation that maybe this could happen, even though I wouldn't say it was necessarily that hopeful that it would happen, but the one thing that kind of made you think that it might is that the potential is so clear, and we've talked about it in the past. You know, the pointer controls and that would make the game so much more fluid, and as we've said, it could really feel like it was fulfilling the original intent with this separation of character movement and shooting. And also it could really make it could be like, because there was actually a co-op mode in the original where someone could pick up a second controller, and therefore you'd actually have two different people doing the movement. And I think with this it's even easier, because it'd be a bit like the Super Mario Galaxy mode, instead of just doing simple stuff with star bits, someone could do the shooting, someone could do the movement. So you've got that, that part of it could be very interesting. And just what I want to see is just amp it up to the next level, be faster than the N64 could be, but more than on that visual level, just have more enemies and more complicated things, because the fluidity you can have with the Wii Remote affords you the chance to do that in a playable fashion. I mean, they pushed it as far as they could with the steering the analog stick around, because it isn't very fluid at all. But now you've got this, they can do so. I'd love to see what Treasure can do. They could go absolutely nuts.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So the other thing I think is interesting about this is people were asking about it in San Francisco. By the way, Aaron Kaluska was there covering it for us, and he's got quite a few impressions and previews up on the site, and you should definitely go check those out. It's easy to miss some of them because we've had so many updates over the past couple weeks, but if you go find the event page for the Nintendo Fall Media Summit 2008, it has links to everything associated with that event, so you can catch up on all of Aaron's coverage there. But so people were asking Reggie and Cammy about this game at E3, and basically what Cammy said is that they looked at the sales of Sin and Punishment on Virtual Console in North America, and they were so strong that they decided that they've already confirmed they're going to be publishing this in America for Wii. And that kind of talk, that's like basically pillow talk to a fanboy. I mean, you know, like, basically Cammy's saying, yes, we actually pay attention to what you want to come to America.
Holy shit! We're actually
going to bring the games over that you
care
about.
Well, I mean, just the fact that... But to be fair, the fact that it did come to America on Virtual Console in the first place was a movement in that direction. And then that's been validated.
I would say the most surprising thing Nintendo's done in the past 10 years.
I would say the Wii is the most surprising thing they've done in 10 years.
Nah, to me, putting Sin and Punishment on Virtual Console for Americans is the craziest thing. Well, it shouldn't be so surprising,
but I think the reason why it is look how few N64 games there are. I mean, if you put it in the context of their overall Virtual Console
strategy...
There
are so many elements working against that to ever happen. You remember, I mean, there's only 100 Mike Squins on one of the first episodes of this podcast said... It will never happen. He basically swore up and down and threatened to give away his firstborn child if it ever happened.
Who was
this? And that's how... Mike Squins, Striker Obi. That's how implausible it was. So I really think it's the most surprising thing Nintendo has done in the past decade. And it worked. Thank God. You know, they took a risk, not a big financial risk, but just they went out on a limb and did something absurd that people actually wanted them to do, and it worked.
I mean, I think the only thing that could top it is if, you know, bringing over, like, all three of the, you know, mother games. That's about the only thing that could top it in terms of what Nintendo
could do. Yeah, that would be pretty crazy,
in terms of stuff that people have wanted forever, and Nintendo has totally ignored.
Sadly, that involves the application of localization resources that was clearly not involved in bringing Cinnabon.
I think one interesting thing about the Sin and Punishment situation, though, is that they decide that this too was rumored prior to E3. I wonder. It's kind of amazing that both of these things that we were supposed to see at E3 that didn't materialize showed up.
I mean, Punch Out was more explicit in the sense that, you know, it very well could show. Sin and Punishment was more of a speculative thing in terms of, like, Treasure's working on Wii games. Wouldn't Sin and Punishment work really well? They've done it on Virtual Console. There's a thing about it in Smash Brothers. It was more of a sort of intuitive projection rather than supposedly
there was hard info.
Wasn't
there some very, very strong hinting from IGN about it?
No, not that I recall. It was all the Kid Icarus stuff.
About Sin and Punishment? No, that was Kid Icarus.
Yeah, all the Kid Icarus stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
no,
and
Sin and Punishment was very much more sort of intuitive, hopeful projection of, like, well, if you look at the Virtual Console situation, you look at the fact that it's in Smash Brothers. And the fact it makes sense.
That's
it would
why
work.
We didn't expect it. It makes sense.
Exactly. No. Okay, so moving on to the next game. I don't think anybody saw this coming, but we have another code too. This is the DS game that was called Trace Memory in North America, and this is a sequel for the Wii.
Oh yeah, baby. Trace this memory.
And it's not a remake. It is a sequel, and the graphics actually look really nice. I thought. It has the same kind of, sort of a soft anime type style, but now it's totally, you know, nice looking 3D graphics. It is. I'm assuming another kind of adventure slash puzzle game. You're moving around trying to solve these mysteries, and you pick up items. And I never played the first one on DS, but I heard a lot of good things about it.
Well,
so it seems
it's
like
a kind
nice...
of game that people have talked about being on Wii for a while, in terms of, you know, the kind of, you could sort of, it's quite sort of casual in how you're involved in it. It's kind of like sitting back on the couch, you know, pointing and clicking and reading a lot.
It's like Zack and Wiki.
I think it'd probably be a bit like, but less involved in the gameplay sense. You know, probably just more like reading through text and
I would say more relaxed.
Yeah, more relaxed is a very good way to put it, I would say. And it's the kind of experience I think should work really well on Wii, and it's been talked about. Been that much of it, so I guess it's quite a few. It raises questions whether they'll ever do like a Hotel Dusk for Wii or that sort of, you know, maybe down the line.
Okay, so then the next game we have another sequel, Forever Blue 2. This is also known as Endless Ocean, which we've talked about recently on the show.
Yes.
Greg, I know you picked it up, and now they're doing a sequel.
Yeah, well,
and
I mean, it's sold pretty well.
Some of these problems,
I mean, it's sold
people...
pretty well, I think, in quite a few regions, Endless Ocean. Right. And, you know, it's another one of those games where the participation is quite relaxed, and of course the setting and everything is very relaxing, so that's a very big part of this game's appeal. It'd be interesting interested to see what they can do with a sequel in terms of what you can really expand upon. And I mean, as we kind of alluded to the last time that people heard us talking about this game anyway, the restrictions on your mobility, it would be nice to see those lessened in some way. I think a big part, if you see what they're doing with Africa on PS3, in terms of like it's more Pokemon Snap type, in terms of the the photography is more of an integral part, I really think that should be expanded upon. Because that to me, interesting, and that's the point really. Is with this kind of game is to see a lot of interesting stuff, and part of that should be capturing it and sharing it with your friends and all that. And that was woefully underutilized in the first one, in my opinion. And
it's going to be interesting to see how it stacks up against Aquanaut's Holiday, which just came out on PS3.
But
of course,
visually, it's going to be at a huge disadvantage, and that is important for this kind of game. It is. But
have they even said what they're doing in this game versus the original?
No, I don't think so. Well, this was part of like a montage. These games are part of a montage, which, you know, it's a few seconds apiece, and some of them were talked about and followed up upon, like Sin and Punishment 2 at the Nintendo of America event. Many of them weren't, and this is one of them.
Right.
One other thing I would say about it is, of course, you could do online with Endless Ocean.
Doesn't the first one have online co-op?
It does.
Where you two people get together.
Yeah, it does. But
you know,
course,
I mean, if you add Wii Speak to that, that could be casual. Let's get together and just have a chat, and while we do that, we'll
underwater.
Epic.
That would really increase the playability there, James.
The thing is, that would only work so much.
That
would work better with a headset system, though, not the speakerphone type deal.
No, they can have it come through the microphone, and it's already pre-garbled. It can come through the speaker on the Wii remote.
Maybe the build quality of the Wii Speak will do that for you on a hardware level.
Every game, it's like you're talking via underwater intercoms.
Yeah, the next game on the list is Let's Tap, and this is the Yuji Naka game. His studio is called Probe, and
by the way, I'm gonna put this entire.
See, it makes me happy right now. I'm happy.
That music.
Yeah, James, you really need to play that music on here because I recommend to all of our listeners that you go look for the Let's Tap website. It's their Japanese website, and it has this crazy song playing in the background.
That's
that.
Oh my god!
When all the
kids come in. Oh man, it's the shit.
Remember when this game was first kind of hinted at? Or who remembers exactly what he called this game?
Is something a penguin
it's the
could
game
play?
That even a penguin could play.
Yes.
I'm a penguin right here.
It's not evident from the video, but what I've heard about this game is that basically the idea is that you're supposed to put the controller down on some surface
and then
bang
the
on the
shit
surface.
Out
of it. So basically you play the game without even touching the controller, but you're affecting the controller.
I've heard,
it's picking up the motions
like
above you of your vibrating something else.
You can just put it on.
That would make sense, and that way everyone would have that.
Yeah, so that's like your first call as a surface to do the tapping.
Right.
Very interesting. I can't imagine. It's kind of fascinating.
It's a cool concept. It seems like a very simple thing, sort of like it's more like a mini game thing. So it looks more like a WarioWare type thing where you really only need like one or two inputs to play the whole game, but it's a party thing, you know? Okay, so the next game on our list is Wii Ski and Snowboard. This was sort of one of those stealth announcements. It's in the video montage, but I don't know. We got a couple more details about it since then, but it's a sequel to Namco's game Wii Ski, which came out in Japan and North America earlier. It was the first third-party game to support the balance board, so obviously you can expect the sequel will do the same, and this time they're adding snowboards to it as well. But the first one got an A+ from Nick Suttner at 1UP.com, so apparently some people thought it was great.
And he
I
was
get
wrong.
To play it. I would love to play it, but his was it was an outlier.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Most people didn't think it was that good, but it got generally pleasant comments, you know, from what I read, and I was interested in playing it, but we never did get a review copy, unfortunately. James is still singing to himself.
Choose your tapping game, Johnny.
The power of that song. Yeah, so I'm getting really excited for ski season. It's coming up in just a couple of weeks here in Colorado. So this kind of thing is on my mind. And like, I always thought, you know, to me, snowboarding games are always sort of, yeah, well, it's different. You know, it's sort of like wave race. You know, like, I don't own a Sea-Doo or a jet ski, but it's kind of a fun game. But now that I actually have experience and I understand what skiing and snowboarding are like, I feel like I'm going to approach this kind of game from a completely different angle. I'm really interested in trying out either, you know, either this or the Shaun White game or something. I want to play a good snow mountain game this ski season and like get into it and be like, is this accurate or, you know,
no.
Does this actually make me feel like I'm on the mountain or not? I don't know. I just it kind of appeals to me more than it ever did before.
I doubt it does make you feel like you're on a mountain. Unless in the case of Shaun White, you're on a mountain where you're going to be cut by giant polygons.
Well, the Wii version of Shaun White is not the prettiest thing.
It looks like
the,
ass.
The 360 version could actually be pretty cool. I like some of the features. It's quite a different game.
Yeah.
But Wii Ski, I'm still interested in trying, although at this point, I guess I might as well wait for the sequel.
Yeah, but that is a pretty quick...
It's very cute. You basically, you know, you like play with your little Miis, and it's very not super realistic, but it's supposed to be pretty fun.
That game came along for a sequel. It's pretty quick turnaround on a sequel.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure it won't be a massive upgrade. All right, so the next game on the list is a WiiWare game called Cave Story, and Aaron Kluska wrote a nice preview of this. If you want some more information, you should go read that. But this is a PC game that's been out as freeware for years. And it's like this one guy made the entire game. It's that kind of situation. And it's apparently kind of like a Metroid or like a Metroidvania kind of game where you have this big world and you explore the map and you gain powers as you play through the game. And, you know, you get more and more powerful and you gain more abilities. You go back to a place earlier and you do something different. It's very 2D, very old school. And it's coming out on WiiWare with some new features that are exclusive to the Wii version. This sounds way up my alley. John, it sounds like you're kind of pumped for it.
Well,
too.
I mean, it looks, the thing is, it looks kind of lo-fi. I mean,
it is lo-fi.
Yeah. I mean, is that
sure,
by intent?
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
Okay.
It's probably intentional and also necessary when you consider the roots of the game. Yeah. And actually, in Aaron's preview, he notes that they've actually gone back, the guy who created it has gone back and and doubled the resolution of all the sprites.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
to make it look better
on
the
PC
screen.
Version, it doesn't actually even play in the full screen. It plays in this small window.
Right.
Yeah.
So in order for this to be full screen on the Wii, they're actually doubling the resolution of the graphics. So, it's not totally lo-fi by intention. I'm sure part of it was for him to make it for less money and with less time, you know, so he could actually get it out there. But it's very highly regarded PC game. I guess if you're interested in it, you could go look it up and play it on your PC. I think I'll probably just wait and save myself for the WiiWare version. It's coming out later this year, but it sounds pretty cool. All right, the last Wii game that I have on the list here is Klonoa. This is like the door to Phantom Isle, I think. But this is a Wii remake of the first Klonoa game on PS1, which is by far the best. And it's a 2.5D platformer, basically. So, you know, a lot of people, when I wrote my Wario review, people in the talkback were talking about 2D platformers and how that, you know, they wish there were more made. Zach did a nice blog post about sort of the the endangerment of the 2D platformer genre. And Klonoa is, you know, it has nice 3D graphics, and they're being upgraded quite a bit for the Wii version. But it, you know, in terms of gameplay, it's a 2D platforming game, and it's really, really good. So if you're a fan of Mario, Wario, Yoshi's Island, things like that, you should put this on your radar, because the original Klonoa is probably the best 2D platformer on PlayStation. One of the best of that entire generation. So it's really, really good, and it's pretty cool that they're remaking this one. And I'm glad they chose this one and not the PS2 sequel, because it wasn't as good. I don't know. Am I the only one here who's played Klonoa?
I've played some of the PS2 sequel.
Okay. Yeah. So imagine that, but a lot better.
But I've read about it, and it's one of those games that kind of has a cult following because it's really, really quality platformer.
Now, this was a.
It's really
was
cool.
Was it Konami? Or was it.
Namco made it.
Yeah, Namco.
Yeah. Yeah. And the character design is really bad. It's like a rabbit with these weird star shaped ears.
It's not.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's not bad. But, it's just weird.
It's just stupid. But the gameplay is fantastic. The controls are great. The level designs are really cool.
Fucking
it's one of these games
rabbit.
Where you have to use the enemies in order to solve puzzles and progress through the levels. So you're jumping on top of enemies or you're throwing them in a certain way that helps you get to places you couldn't get before. It's really clever use of the mechanics. And it has a lot of nice things where, like, you know, you're sort of like Kirby 64, where the stage sort of wraps around itself, you know, as you go around. So it has these nice 3D camera effects, even though it's played on a 2D plane, basically. But before we get into DS, there are several GameCube games that are being remade for Wii with Wii controls. They're primarily re-releases, but they are sort of fitting in Wii controls, although it's not
and in some cases
very clear to
me.
Yeah,
right. Some of these games did not have. Most of these had widescreen to begin with. But some
I
of
don't
them
think so.
Didn't.
No,
so
virtually no first-party GameCube games had widescreen modes apart from F-Zero GX.
Right. I was thinking of Progressive Scan.
Yeah, Progressive Scan. Although it would have had
Progressive
Scan.
Most of these did have Progressive
Scan, but not widescreen.
Yeah.
Right, so yeah, they're doing that also, and these are all great games. You've got Pikmin 1 and 2, Metroid Prime 1 and 2, Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, Mario Power Tennis, and Chibi Robo. That's really actually a surprising choice, Chibi Robo.
I mean, I guess like Pikmin 1 and 2, Metroid Prime 1 and 2 strike you in terms of that they could be enhanced, potentially.
Yeah.
Sure, and I think Mario Tennis is also a great choice. You stick in Wii Tennis, Wii Sports Tennis controls in that. Fantastic.
But see, I'm surprised
that
they're just not making another Mario Tennis game with Wii Sports.
I've wondered the same thing.
Well, they probably will. I'm sure
they
will eventually.
Will,
and one thing I noted in the forums about this that I really like about this program, I mean, they're all budget price. We don't know about American or non-Japan releases yet, but it's a matter of time. But the really nice thing is, one, some of these games are hard to find. Pikmin 2, Chibi Robo, Jungle Beat can be a little bit hard to find these days. So this will be a chance. It's like a reprinting. It's a chance for you to go get these, not pay very much money. Hopefully they'll be improved, although Jungle Beat, I can't imagine playing this without the bongos makes any sense whatsoever. Unfortunately, Jungle Beat is an amazing game. I am really worried about the Wii version. I think it's going to be
I mean, you could still, hypothetically support the bongos if you plug them into
it. Yeah, it could.
You better do that, because the Barrel Blast game, or Jet, whatever the hell it was called, didn't do that. Incredibly.
Right. And that was a big mistake. But, you know, the problem is, even if Jungle Beat for Wii retroactively supports the bongos, I really doubt they're going to manufacture
them.
No, exactly.
Then you're asking people to find them on eBay.
I think they're expecting
people
to buy this and play it with motion controls,
and it's
not
going to suck. It's not. The whole tactile element is lost. The kind of the timing is going to be an issue, because if you're trying to get really good scores on Jungle Beat, which to me is the whole point of the game, then your timing needs to be pretty sharp, and I don't trust the gesture stuff to replicate that very well at all.
I would love to be blown away by this, but I think Jungle Beat's going to be the odd man out
here. I mean,
it's
nice in
the
sense that it's an underappreciated game, in sales terms at least.
Sure, but I think it's going to be... I think people are going to get the wrong idea about this. If they play it on Wii with a remote nunchuck, I think they're going to think this game sucks, and it doesn't suck.
Yeah, because it goes from being
this sort of... It just needs to be played with a very specific controller. It's kind of like doing Samba de Amigo for Wii. it may seem like a good idea at first, but if you spend more than 30 seconds thinking about it, you're like, actually, that might not work so well. And unfortunately, I think it's going to give people the wrong idea about what is a very good game, but the controller just isn't designed for this kind of thing. So,
we'll see.
The other ones, Metroid Prime could be really cool with Wii controls.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about the balancing of the game, though?
Would it become too easy?
If you've got lock-on free aim or something in that, doesn't it just become where normally you were just trudging around, using the R button all the time or whatever is...
It could be, but, you know, I don't think it's going to dramatically affect the balance of the game, because the challenge in Metroid Prime 1 and 2 comes not from the combat, but from the puzzle solving and the exploration.
Well,
so
Prime 2...
The combat never was that difficult
to begin
with.
I think Prime 2, the combat rats ramped up a bit. I mean, there was bits in that that were more difficult.
To some extent.
I mean, some people
and
thought
I
it was
think
too
what they
hard
did with
anyway,
Corruption
so
was they...
Maybe it'll be better. I didn't think
exactly.
It was too hard,
exactly.
Yeah. And what about exactly. Chibi Robo? Because I don't really know much about Chibi Robo other than it's meant to be very good.
Well,
do you think
Chibi
it would benefit?
Robo, a lot of the chore, yeah, a lot of it is about doing chores. It's sort of it got that Harvest Moon kind of vibe where, you know, it's a lot of it is exploration and getting from one point in the world to the other. That's part of the challenge. But a lot of it also is you get quite a lot of benefits from basically doing mundane chores. And the reason the chores don't become nauseating is because of the amazing sound design. You know, they play these really cool sounds when you do them, and it's very mentally satisfying. So I think, you know, when you pull out your toothbrush and you're scrubbing stains off the floor, it makes plenty of sense to do that with motion control.
Right, okay.
I don't think that'll be a negative.
But it depends on how I do, if it's just waggle.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on how they do it. But I think
faster, gotta scrub fucking floors.
But
here's the thing, I mean, those tasks were mundane to begin with. So I think adding the waggle doesn't make
and
them
it's
worse.
Not like,
no,
it's
but it
not
could make
sort
them exhausting.
Of, and it's not the timing and intricate like Jungle Beat. So if it is a little, you know,
it's not compromising
the gameplay in any way, really.
So I mean, it could be annoying. It could be a little overdone with the waggle. But I think if they constrain themselves, there are things you could add to Chibi Robo that would make it a little more charming than it already is. Although that's hard to fathom. It's a very charming game. So anyway, what I was saying in the forums about these re-releases with updated controls is, especially in the case of Pikmin, what I like about it is it sort of forces Nintendo to get way more outside the box sequel. With Pikmin 3, which we know is still in development, it basically means that it can't just be Pikmin 1 and 2 with different controls, because they're now literally doing that with these re-releases. So it means that they have to do something truly innovative with Pikmin 3, and it's going to be totally crazy and different. And, you know, it could be a total disaster, but at least
You know what I think?
I mean, it doesn't have to be entirely different,
they must
but it does have to be...
And the same goes with Mario Tennis. I'm sure they're going to make a Mario Tennis for Wii,
I think,
a real sequel, but they're going to have to go, they're going to try a little bit harder now, and I like that, you know?
I think the fact that they actually have agreed to do this with the Pikmin 1 and 2 means they already have something in mind for it, too. Like, I think this wouldn't happen unless Nintendo said, or unless Miyamoto said, yeah, I've got something much better.
Yeah,
than
I mean,
this.
It could.
I think it shows a confidence in their game design that is very reassuring.
And also, hopefully, you know, I think Pikmin has got this. It's one of those Nintendo franchises that is beloved by the Nintendo base to a reasonable extent, but also has the potential to sort of branch out a little. And then if you introduce the Wii audience to it with these budget titles, maybe it's a little gateway into what they're going to do with the fully realized sequel. So it's a bit it's a different model to Metroid Prime 1 and 2, where you're just trying to sort of squeeze sort of people that would just like, you know, I doubt, you know, you're not gonna reach out to anybody probably with Metroid Prime 1 and 2. They just you might just get people that fancy the idea of playing a really good game at a decent price with new controls. But Pikmin 1 and 2 could have more meaningful consequences for the franchise. I think this was interesting.
Well, I mean, what I like about it is the fact that all of these games, pretty much across the board, they're games that really should have been more impactful than they were, but they weren't just because they were on the GameCube. If they would have been on the PS2,
they could have been absolutely massive hits. I suppose it's interesting.
So,
yeah, that's a really keen observation.
Yeah,
on the Wii, there's this massive audience.
Don't do it again.
That, you know, this massive, almost PS2 size audience eventually that is going to be able to appreciate these games. That's what I like the most about it.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. So I guess the last thing we should note about this, in Japan, these are going to retail for about $30
bucks
each when you do the conversion rate. Yeah, and games are typically more expensive in Japan than they are in America. So I think for the U.S. audience, and I'm sure they'll be overpriced in
Europe.
Usually.
Oh, yeah.
But for the American audience, these really need to be $20 to $25. If they're $30, they're not going to do as well. I really think if you're re-releasing these old, you know, some of these games are 6 or 7 years old.
I think Pikmin,
I think you need to go for the $20 price getting point into if you're really going to have these be effective.
Issues here in the sense that it has to be carefully branded because there's a lot of budget stuff on the Wii that's awful. And so...
I don't know how this is just a challenge.
I mean, if you price it too high, you're going to put people off. But on the other hand, you don't want to signal that it's got something in common with shovelware.
Yeah, but I you're not going to have that problem because the people who have the preconception that $20 games on Wii suck already know what all these games are.
Sure.
Yeah. The people who don't care. Because obviously, these $20 crappy games on Wii are selling like gangbusters. So to me, that's even more incentive to price these in line with all the other $20 shovelware games because they'll just sell better.
Parents shopping for children, or you know, that sort of situation, and that they use
price
as an inference for quality. You know, I mean. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they do.
I'm not talking about everybody. People buy on all sorts of different bases, but I believe there is a certain amount of people out there that might think, you know, if I'm buying somebody a present or whatever, you don't want to buy the cheap one. You know, you buy something like that. You know, there's an interesting balance to strike here.
It could
between, it has to be budget.
Yeah, but you know, all Nintendo has to do is put a label on the front that says game of the year.
If you have the
these games have all been very acclaimed. Yeah, if you brand it right,
I think they could strike a really good balance because there's all this cheap stuff on Wii, and then there's a chance to get something cheap that's good. I think you could actually find a sweet spot. So it's a bit of a challenge, bit of an opportunity, but I will see how well they do with it. I think it's going to be really interesting how much they market it or whether they just got to put it out there and let it sit on the shelves and be done
with it. The interesting thing is that Nintendo is kind of choosing this instead of putting out greatest hits of Wii games. Right? I mean, it just seems...
I think they would prefer to continue selling their Wii games at full price. So this sort of is almost like an alternative.
There's no incentive to cut price, because their whole point with E3, how much did they tell us about? They're still selling. And they're still selling at full price.
Right, so it doesn't make sense to do Player's Choice for Wii games.
It's just a very interesting approach, though, because essentially what they're doing is something that nobody's ever done before. They're actually mining really good games from their back catalog, while all their Wii games are still full price, but you know they still kind of have this cheaper line of games.
You bring up a good point, John, in the sense that this is their way of tapping into a budget market without compromising their strategy of continuing to sell their Wii games at full price.
It's brilliant.
If they do it well.
I kind of expected this, but I didn't expect this, if that makes sense. I expect them to re-release the GameCube discs in the Wii packaging.
I did too, yeah. I was really surprised when I found out they were going to have Wii controls, because I was surprised that they went to that level.
What do you think, man? It's interesting, though, that these games have been chosen, and they're a little... some of them sold kind of well in their own respects, or in certain regions, or usually there's some sort of acclaim associated with them, but a little more off-center, not quite as prominent. To what extent do you think, if it's a success... Do you go to Mario Sunshine, maybe Luigi's Mansion, Wind Waker?
Do you go to The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess? Oh, wait, they already did that.
Okay, with that, we should move on to the DS stuff. And actually, I think I'm going to go a little bit out of order on the list that we're looking at, but I think a good segue from the Wii stuff to the DS stuff is this new Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles game that was announced. It's called Echoes of Time. It's a really weird little bird. It's a game that's being released for Wii and DS at the same time and is essentially the same game on both platforms, right down to the graphics.
Oh,
it's really strange. The Wii version is literally a DS game on your TV screen. So you see on the left you see the gameplay screen, and then on the right, a little bit smaller, is what you'd see on the top screen, which is just like your map. So it's really interesting, and the reason for doing this, for selling it, it's like a $40 in Japan, at least. It's a $40 game on both platforms, and the reason that they're selling it on both platforms is that they're intercompatible with each other. So I'm assuming there's some connectivity stuff you can do, probably.
Yeah, there is.
Even locally, I would you could play with a couple people on the DS versions on their playing on their DSs on the couch, and then a couple other people playing on the Wii version on the TV. So there's that element, but also both versions are online, and including in the online, they can actually play against each other. So you have weird cross-platform compatibility here, where a person who owns the Wii version can play online with a person who owns the DS version. And I think more importantly, people who own the DS version can play online with other people who have the DS version, because that was the main feature that was missing from the last Crystal Chronicles game on DS, Ring of Fates. And that game, for me, was pointless. I just would never. I don't know enough people who play their DS games locally for that to have been a good purchase for me. But I am interested in this because now that I can play it online, there's so much more potential for me to actually get something out of it in multiplayer.
You know what you need? I think this game did two things. One, I think it essentially recommitted the object of connectivity between the Wii and the DS. I think it's going to
be.
I think it's going to be an interesting test bed for connectivity.
Although it's also interesting that it's once again Square that are floating it. They did it before.
Yeah,
they did it before
with the
GBA to GC, but this time you haven't got Nintendo pushing a four swords alongside it. At least not that we've heard of today.
No.
And also the Wii is online as well.
But I think.
But it doesn't require any extra hardware.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't need cables.
But that's the incredible thing the Wii and the DS seem like they could really facilitate the intent of the connectivity on GameCube so much better, and yet it's been mostly a sort of passed over opportunity until now.
Right. Well, now Square is finally taking the bait, and they're going to try to do it the right way. And it's really interesting. I mean, if you're a fan of the original Crystal Chronicles on GameCube, I think you have to be excited about this, even though
graphics
aren't obviously it's a DS game on your
I suppose,
TV screen.
I mean,
in terms of if you buy the Wii version,
if you think of Four Swords, I mean, obviously the
graphics aside, it's the same concept, but now without all the crappy barriers to entry, you know? I mean, now it can be played sort of the way it was meant to be played in the first place.
I'm absolutely
and it's online.
About this game.
It's so crazy,
but
it just might work.
I think it's really cool.
I think
cool.
It did one...
Really, really
I think
cool.
It's got one bad thing, though. I think this puts the sword, if you pardon the term, inside the other Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles game.
Crystal Bearers.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, it might. I mean, I'm still hoping they push that back and they're just going to do something completely different with it, but looks
bad. I liked what they showed.
I mean, we don't know necessarily that was turned into this.
Yeah.
This could
be
the sequel to Ring of Fates.
This isn't that. I can tell you that right now, because the graphics they showed
We don't
that
know that the
were,
development
were,
resources were,
very...
were shifted over. That Crystal Bearers could still be in development.
Yeah, but
certainly
I don't
it's
know.
Not
I mean,
coming
this
out
is, this is the
soon.
Fifth Crystal Chronicles game in the last couple years. Fourth and fifth?
It's the third. There was one on GameCube,
third
and this is the
fourth.
Second one
for
DS.
You have the DS game, you have that the GameCube WiiWare title, you have both of these games.
Oh, well, yeah, I forgot about the WiiWare one. It doesn't really have anything to do with
Yeah, but it's
Crystal
still it's still resources.
But,
I think this kind of... I think that game's just going to start.
I don't know. That's totally speculative. I mean, obviously Crystal Bearers has been delayed heavily, and whether or not it still exists, we don't know. But, I mean, this is really a sequel to Ring of Fates, and I don't know. I am a little confused as to why anybody would buy the Wii version of this, because I think it obviously makes more sense on the DS. If you know, it's equally online, but it's also portable. They're both the same price.
Could it be like making
the appeal of the Wii version?
In terms of you remove the need to have multi-card. So
definitely.
If you want to play with someone in the same room, you just put the Wii version
true.
And then it communicates both DSs or whatever.
Yeah, see,
and maybe you can even play local multiplayer on the Wii version without any DS.
Too,
maybe you could just have two or three people with
if
their
that's
Wii
the
remotes
case, then
playing.
So
if you're not
going to play locally, then the DS you may as well probably. But you know, if you are going to play locally, then the Wii may just make it easier to do.
Right, and apparently this does not have voice chat, unfortunately. It'd be really nice if you had, like, cross-compatibility between the DS microphone yeah. and WeSpeak. That would be badass. Maybe that's something for next year, I guess. But what it does have is some kind of, like, PictoChat online thing where you can draw things and write little messages and communicate that way. And that sounds... That's better than most games have on Wii and DS. So at least you can communicate. I mean, this game... Because it's online, you know, because it is so cooperative, you couldn't play it online without some form of communication. So I'm really glad that they're including something there. The next game on the list, and we're fully into DS territory now, but it won't take long because there weren't a whole lot of new DS announcements other than, like, bizarre
yeah,
Japanese
again,
shit that'll never
blink and you're missing
go anywhere else and that nobody cares about. Right. There's some bizarre crap, but the things that we can identify and that will probably be coming out worldwide, we have Mario and Luigi 3.
Oh, yeah,
that's
well,
pretty
we've
exciting.
We've
it's a new RPG, finally.
Yeah, they're still up to Alpha Dream, are still yeah. doing Mario and Luigi games, and this looks good. I'm really glad that it looks like Bowser's going to be a big focus, because he always steals the show in the Mario RPG games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we haven't seen any babies
great
yet, which
dialogue.
I think is a good yeah. thing.
You say that, but now you've just doomed us to Bowser Jr.
Well, Bowser
thanks.
Jr. wasn't so bad
well,
in
thanks for that.
Time. He was like, you know, he wasn't actually Bowser Jr. He was Bowser when he was a kid. It was. It wasn't actually Bowser Jr.,
game,
but he basically is exactly the same. It was Bowser as a younger man or whatever. And you know they sort of
oh, okay.
they sort of argued with each other
dinosaur?
Who was more badass, basically, stuff like that. You know, so he
oh,
was
yeah,
he was
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of all right in that
That's
context.
Right.
But yeah, Bowser's always fun, like his little haiku in yeah. Super Mario RPG, which is just brilliant. You know, so that's great. And yeah, I mean,
yeah,
hopefully. It'll just sort of strike a balance with sort of interactive elements, I guess, you know, because I think they went a little overboard in Partners in Time. If they can kind of rein
oh,
that in
did
a bit,
they?
I really, I mean, the thing I like the most about the Mario and Luigi RPG games is the dodging part, that interactive part, rather than so much the actual attacks themselves,
uh-huh.
but actually using jump. You know, jumping with Mario and Luigi to avoid attacks.
Right.
That's my favourite part. And then, so if they can get the attacks right on the other side, I think it'll be a lot of fun. And obviously the script and the localisation is always going to be a big part of this. But if you've got Bowser heavily involved, I think you're off to a nice start.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm hoping, because
yeah.
it's been a couple years, they've
it's
taken
been,
longer.
Like, getting on for three,
between
right?
This,
it's,
between
it's,
the last
it's
one and this one.
2005, Partners in Time, right? Just the very
so.
End of
yeah,
2005.
I think yeah, I think
yes.
it was. So like three.
So it's a
three,
much much bigger gap
or something
than there
like
was
that.
Between
so,
Superstar Saga and Partners in Time, much mm-hmm. bigger.
Oh yeah, much bigger. So I'm hoping they've taken their time, and because it's the second game on DS, I hope that has pushed them away from being so gimmicky.
Yeah,
with the
I mean,
controls
I, we,
and the
we've
gameplay.
Se- I mean, in
the
those
Partners
intervening
in time
was
3 years, too gimmicky.
The DS has come so,
so
far, and you've seen so many, you know. Games that are thoroughly unashamed
yeah.
to be completely traditional, and you know, take what you will from it. It's
right.
kind of like the first DS Castlevania, which is an excellent game, but it has some silly touchscreen stuff. Whereas the latter two have just said, nah,
yeah,
no,
they've,
you know,
they've gotten away from that.
Is, let's just get on with it.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, I think what's nice about some of these latter day DS games is they're looking at the DS not so much in terms of its main features being a touchscreen or, you know, shoulder buttons or a microphone, but actually its main selling point and its biggest feature that they want to take advantage of now is
yeah,
the fact that it's 2D.
It's 2D and it's got.
Yeah.
That's
kind
what
of
you're
funny.
Seeing quite a lot of is that that's the primary motivation to put it on DS,
yeah, and
it's
just
2D,
got
it's
2D with an enormous
the
user base. You know, that's
yep.
that's where it's
right.
at right now for 2D stuff. I mean, that's why you've got stuff like Metal Slug 7 coming
yeah.
to DS. I mean, you know,
and that's the whole thing. I mean,
yeah.
I think that there's still demand for that. I mean, we've talked about quite a bit on the site, you know, kind of where the PSP went wrong compared to the DS. And I think one of the places where the PSP went wrong is the fact that they completely underestimated the fact that there is still a massive fan base for 2D gaming. Still.
Yeah, and it's kind of naturally
right.
gravitated towards
yeah.
handhelds, and it's kind of there's been a sort of specialization in terms of you know 3D games on the consoles and 2D on the handhelds, and the PSP sits
yep.
awkwardly in between those two a little, doesn't it, I suppose.
Yep.
Sure, and the PSP is more
yeah,
than capable
yeah.
of 2D
it's
graphics.
The kinds
yeah.
of games
stuff
that have
like
been developed
Loco Roco and Patapon, but
I think
it's those are more of the niche on PSP because it is such a good 3D system that people sort of expect.
Well, but I
PSP
also would say that some of it is
nice
simply that the
graphics.
DS with its superior sales figures has undercut it. You know, it's just that, well, if you make it, as you've said, the DS is the place to go for a 2D game in some way. So people have sort of sacrificed having fancier 2D graphics on the PSP to go for the bigger market and the sort of wider niche that's there on the DS. So some of it isn't the PSP's fault. I don't think so. No. So much as it is just the DS's tremendous,
it's more
phenomenal
of Sony and
success.
How they marketed it and how they directed their resources. Anyway, let's cut that off before it gets completely out of hand. The next game we have is and I don't know the we don't have an English name for this, but it's the new WarioWare game, and the Japanese name is Made in Me, which is kind of a weird title, but the Japanese title of the WarioWare series is Made in Wario, which is sort of a play, I guess, on Made in Japan or Made in China. Yeah. You know, it's Made in Wario. He's developing these games. So in this case, Made in Me refers to the fact that you can now create your own micro games. So it's sort of like this weird interactive version of Mario Paint, where you're setting up the music, you're creating the art, you're arranging things, but then also you're designing the time limit and what, you know, the controls and what you actually do in the game. So it's a really strange
shift in that
from...
case. The title makes sense though, because Made in Ore or Made in Me is sort of the same thing as saying Made in Wario. It's in this case it was made by Wario.
Of course, made by you.
But you have to wonder what role Wario will play in this now.
I mean, it could just be sort of...
Wario never really played
exactly.
a role in these games.
Well,
some
of the Wario humor
trick.
Sort of got into the games and
it'll probably just be the same sort of things like giant noses that you can put into the game or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So called surreal stuff. But it's interesting because obviously with WarioWare...
It's sort of like a Little Big Planet almost type situation, especially
if you can share your levels.
If you can share your levels online, and you really should be able, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to.
I will marry this game.
This could be cool as hell
if you can share your levels through modem sounds. That's the bar.
Well, yeah. The other element of this is, you know, I think one of my favorite things about WarioWare, and a lot of people share this sentiment, is that you get to play the micro games that are based around classic Nintendo games. What if they allow you to make your own versions of all these classic Nintendo games?
Yeah, but that's
awful. So, I mean, it'd almost be like a level editor for Mario, Metroid, Zelda, Excitebike, whatever. That could be
cool. I think it's really, if you said to me, what's the new WarioWare going to be, I would have thought it would be some sort of next input mechanism, whether it be like a balance board or some weird peripheral for the GBA slot on the DS.
I wouldn't have seen this coming.
And this is really cool. I'm really glad I didn't see this coming. I think this is really cool.
Very much outside the box, and a very different
biggest
approach than they've taken before with the series. So I'm pretty excited. We don't know a lot about it yet, but it has a lot of potential for sure. And then finally, for DS, we have Picross 3D. And our last game of the evening is Picross 3D. Now, this one's not for sure coming out of Japan, but, you know, the last Picross for DS did, so... didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
It came out as one of their what's it called? Series like games
Touch
for...
Generations.
Touch Generations.
Yeah, that's great.
Right. So the prospects look good for this one, but it's definitely a different take on it. The grids are basically three-dimensional cubes sort of that you pick away one by one as you eliminate the possibilities, and instead of being left with this sort of like cheap bitmap art, you know, as you are in the 2D versions, you're left with this cool little polygon that's like a dog or whatever. Yeah. So it's like you're playing the numbers game, the Picross puzzle. It's, you know, it's similar to like Sudoku or something like that. But you're playing that with the aim of like carving away at this big block of numbers until you're left with this shape, this three-dimensional shape on the inside. It's a nice little twist, but my concern is it going to be really, really hard? Because I think Picross gets hard very quickly in the 2D version. And it seems like the 3D could be much harder than that.
I mean, maybe they'll do it sort of very carefully so that kind of, you know, they introduce more complicated puzzles sort of quite slowly and maybe get a better grasp on it then and it becomes a bit easier to handle. But, yeah, I mean, I could see it could be, because I mean, it's... you are adding some significant complexity to it when you can't just when you can't see the whole thing in front of you. You know, when it's just a 2D thing right. and you can just see it
now
all
now you've
there.
Got camera control so just so you can
yeah,
look
you're
at,
gonna
the,
like,
at the puzzle.
I assume you're probably going to use the stylus to like swipe the cube around or whatever so you can actually see, you know, every the different facets of what's left and things. So I mean, it will be complicated, but I guess it's nice that you are kind of using the fact that it's a video game a bit more. You know, because Picross is something you could do on pen and paper hypothetically, just standard Picross.
Right.
Whereas this is something which is really using the fact that you know you can have something three dimensional.
It's a video game.
Yeah. So in that sense, maybe you think it's more value added in that.
See, I kind of like the added complexity of it because. I don't know, I kind of like the ability for a puzzle game to get ridiculously hard. So maybe this...
I hit a barrier, and you know, once it takes me more than an hour to solve a puzzle, I just put the game
funnily
down.
Funnily enough, actually, there's a cut-off with Picross. If you don't solve it in an hour, you don't get your little animation as a reward.
What? Fuckers! Wow.
This is true, yeah. Which is really good. Some of the...
This game's probably a little over my head. I kick ass at Sudoku, but Picross, I have... It just my brain doesn't quite grasp the strategies of it, so
it is a lot like Sudoku in that ultimately what it boils down to is the execution of an algorithm. I mean that's it doesn't really involve creative thinking at all, but the creative thinking can help bridge some gaps of just the when you've got a really enormous puzzle to actually execute it as like a machine would be not a lot of fun for a start.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why I think my brain just I've never been able to fully understand the algorithms of Picross
it's
a crossword
funny,
or a
because...
Sudoku or something else.
Greg, you say it wouldn't be a lot of fun, and you're absolutely right, because a couple years ago, I tried to write an algorithm to solve Sudoku puzzles, and it totally sapped the fun out of doing Sudoku puzzles. From that point on...
It's kind of like the illusion of creative thinking is what makes it fun.
when I realized how it really just boils down to one very repeatable algorithm, I'm like, this isn't fun
it's
anymore.
It's basically a bunch of nested do loops and if statements, and... That's what your brain is doing. It's like teaching your brain to work like a computer, and it's very good for you. It's good exercise for your brain to do that. But
you know what else is good for your brain?
Here it comes.
Sap.
Let's tap.
Choose your tapping game.
That is very good for your brain.
All right, so that's the last game. We're done with the show. Send your comments.
I wanted to mention something, though, that we haven't talked about. It was that Wii game called Cosmic Walker. Did you see that? It was another blink and you'll miss it thing. We don't know anything about it, but it looked very cool.
No, I didn't.
It was like this cel-shaded kind of jet set radio kind of looking thing.
Oh, the astronaut.
Yeah, it's called Cosmic Walker.
I did see that, but I had no fucking idea what
that
was.
Neither do I, but
it looks like it could be really cool.
Space and, I don't know. I mean, do you think it could be like an endless...
Well, you know, anything with astronauts in it, I'm interested in, so...
That looked really interesting.
Is it supposed to be like, I mean, we probably know nothing about it. It's like Endless Ocean in Space.
Yeah, I've heard that kind of mood. But I don't know the kind of the cell shaded kind of style. I don't know whether it fits so much with that. I don't know.
It could still be the exploration element.
Yeah, it might be a bit more.
Of course, what are you really exploring just outside in space?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise we have no idea. But it looks interesting, and you know, I guess just the general concept of like kind of navigating around space or whatever is kind of cool. So I mean, it's one to keep an eye on anyway. Of all the, sure, there's plenty that we haven't mentioned. I think it was some 2D games or like Legend of Muramasa or something that looked quite interesting. I mean, there's loads of stuff.
Yeah, that's the Vanillaware game.
That's the Vanillaware game.
Coming
it got
to
a
North
US
America.
Release. Yes.
Yeah, that did get a US
release.
That's one of the things we did hear follow-up.
That's pretty
on.
Cool.
That's the big thing about that game, because we knew it was coming, but it was Japan only as far as we knew.
Yeah, that's right.
So right. US I tried release. To focus on actual Boom. New game announcements here, but yeah, that one is pretty enticing.
That's making
very
me very
beautiful
happy.
2D action game for Wii. So anyway, by all means, if you heard anything on here that sound interesting or that you have a question about or, you know, just a comment, maybe an idea that we could discuss, send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and we will close the show with words of wisdom from John Lindemann because it is his night to shine.
My night to shine, the last thing I have to say is actually I got the beta tonight for Little Big Planet, and my words of wisdom are that very much reminds me of a Nintendo game, and I think that if there is one game that, if you're a Nintendo fan, that you would love on PS3, there really aren't many, I don't think. I mean, unless you want the real, real hardcore stuff, Little Big Planet is it. Little Big Planet is it. It's very much, it gives you that, as soon as you hop on there and start playing around with it, it instantly gives you that kind of magical Nintendo feeling. That's what I will say. Magical Nintendo feeling.
Well, it's tempting. It is tempting me, and if I had some money right now, I would buy a PS3 for that.
Yeah, it's really,
I really would.
Really good.
But I can't afford it, so I'm going to wait till next year for another price cut.
Because they need one right now.
That's the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and I really hope that the audio made it this far.
Oh,
bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye, everybody. Sort of fascinating.
It's a cool concept. I mean, it seems like a very simple thing, sort of like a, you know, like a well, it's more like a mini game thing. So it looks more like a WarioWare
guys,
type thing, where you really only need like one or two inputs to play the whole game. But it's a party
it,
thing,
James?
You know.
What is it?
I have something important to announce.
Yes.
What? Yes.
User tapping game.
Kids? Ah, keep it going, James. Keep it going.
No, wait. Is this going to sound okay on
no,
the...
No, it's going to sound terrible, but I'm going to cut it out.
Yeah. Oh, okay,
but just
yeah.
So we can have...
No, you should definitely splice it in,
yeah,
though,
I'm
so
actually
everybody
have
can hear it in
the
background.
Now we can have the genuine emotion.
The song is amazing.
I'm listening to it right now.
Yeah, James, you're going to have to turn that off so we can move on. It can eat up the rest of your day. Let's tap and let's tap. Let's tap tapping game. Oh, my God. It's amazing.